Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by the Brain Injury Law Group, Attorney Gordon Johnson, www.tbilaw.com, 800-992-9447. To get automatic updates, join us, tbisn.org. When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He's talking about getting better from the brain injury. Write him on the web at tbilaw.com. 800-992-9447. Welcome to another edition of Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hi, everybody. Happy Saturday night. Hope you guys are having a good time tonight. If you're not, Les Paul, I see you out there in the audience. Aren't you supposed to be at a concert? I'll have to get him in a minute. Anyway, welcome everybody to Brain Injury Radio Network. This is your normal Wednesday night host. And no, you haven't completely lost it. It is, in fact, Saturday, but I'm moonlighting. A couple of hosts out on one, I guess. We're just down to one that's been off on vacation. And Craig was going to a function tonight, and I thought Les Paul was going to a concert that sounded wonderful. So, anyway, I just decided to play some music. We could have thrown on a tape, but survey says you guys don't like that as well as the opportunity to have, to be able to call in and have interactive radio. So I decided to show up tonight. And I'm feeling a little under the weather. In fact, one of the things we might talk about, well, anyway, erase that. Let's step back for a minute. I just decided that show up tonight, so if there was anything any of you wanted to talk about, regarding your brain or anything else that's on your mind within reason, that I would open up the studio tonight and play some music. I came across something in an article I did the other night, although I want to save this one, too. I keep doing that, and I don't have the backup stuff for my show. But in any case, if you're out there listening tonight and you're home on Saturday night, like a few of us are, then call in. Call in to 424-243-9540. Again, that's 424-243-9540. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and 10 different hosts is what I used to say. I'm going to speak for the original platform for now. 10 different hosts, 7 nights a week, so we all bring something different to the table, a different way of approaching things. And if you listen to one or two shows and you don't like them, listen a couple other nights, because I think that with the variety of hosts that we have, everybody is going to be able to relate to somebody, and that's a lot better than being out there alone. I see Les Paul in the chat room, and that concert he was supposed to go to that's so great is actually tomorrow. We'll have him around tonight. We have our invisible guest is even more invisible now because they're not there anymore. Any case, 7 days a week, and you can hear the shows if you're not available to make it to one of the live shows, because we do broadcast all over the country and in 36 other countries. So assume it's you in some of those other countries are right now and can listen to these shows in the archive on demand. That happens relatively quick when we get off the air live, probably within the next half hour or so, sometimes close to immediately those shows show up in the archive. So whether you're it sounds like we have a race car going down the road out here. In any case, we've added a new platform as well before our original 3-hour platform. And our regular shows, of course, started at 7, have started for the last year at 7 p.m. Pacific time. And now we've added a new tier at 5 p.m. Pacific time, right before the other shows. And I noticed that some of you out there who are used to listening to the original platform all through this last year are saying that you're having some trouble finding our original shows and the people that you've been listening to, because when you look on Blog Talk Radio or Brain Injury Radio right now, it's showing the program page for the earlier program. And I just want to bring it to your attention that right underneath the program page, when you're searching, when you're on the right day and you see someone else's show than the one you're looking for, there is a little tiny arrow that points to the right underneath that picture. And if you click on that arrow, it'll flip the page, kind of like flipping the page on a book, and then you'll see the original platform host's program notes and see if that's a show that you'd like to indulge in. Also, the new platform has some really wonderful programs on it, so you're just about able to get pretty close to 5 hours a day of, well, Brain Injury Radio, and that earlier platform is expanded. We've got some other things brain-related, a caregiver show. In fact, we have a new host starting next Monday, Dr. Kelly Orr, and he's going to be doing a show on caregiving. We try to listen to you out there as we have meetings, and we have a lot of survivor stories and recovery shows. But one thing we haven't had is a caregiver show, and so Dr. Orr has quite a colorful background. Well, I'll let him tell you about it, but I think you're really going to enjoy him and the show starting next Monday. He's really wonderful. So we're trying to get a little of something that caters to everybody on Brain Injury Radio, and we hope you're enjoying it. I think some of us older hosts are doing a little bit better, although it might not sound like it tonight. I'm getting kind of froggy, and Les Paul made a comment earlier. He left me a message, and I wasn't available at the telephone, and I heard it, and I heard what he said, and I'll let him tell you about it later, but I've been really dragging the last few days, and feeling like if I laid down and went to sleep, I wouldn't wake up for days, kind of like a bear hibernates in the winter. And we really did have a beautiful day today, but you can feel it in the air. I live in the Midwest, where there's a definite four change in the season, and it was nice today. It truly was, but in the evening, it's been getting down a little bit cooler, and some of the leaves are starting to turn just a little bit. You know, not the ones that are real pretty, but leaves going loose, blowing around, and some of the trees turning brown. And in the morning or late in the evening like this, you can feel the chill in the air and know that fall is on the way. And I like fall, but I like spring a lot better. Fall has beautiful colors, but I always know that winter is coming after that, and I don't appreciate winter so much, I guess. It really exacerbates my physical symptoms that I have. And, you know, one of the residuals I have is after my craniotomy, I acquired, doggone it, what did I do with that iPad? I was going to read you. I acquired something akin to a trigeminal neuralgia around my face where the incision is. And, of course, that's very painful. And 10 years, I guess, after I had the craniotomy that left me with that, I started having widespread pain all over my body. My joints were killing me, and I was always tired, and just when these symptoms would go on, a lot of my original residuals would flare up. And so one of the things you guys have heard me talk about a lot, you've heard me use things like full basket syndrome and sensory overload. And I got thinking about it, and I'm so used to using those words, those phrases, that I thought I would take a look here and see what a couple of resources had to say about sensory overload as far as describing it. And since I see Les Paul join me, I'm going to unmute him in just a second, but I'm going to see if any of this sounds familiar to him or to any of you. Now, they don't specifically talk about this being related to brain injury. However, I think you're going to recognize some of these things, and I think one thing can beget another. When you have an injury, and by the way, I'll give a disclaimer, we are not doctors. Well, not all of us. Looks like we got some new doctors coming on the programs, but most of us are not doctors, and even the doctors are not here to dispense medical advice. We can only give opinions and share our own experience, strength, and hope, and listen to your stories and hear from you what helps and doesn't help, and understand that there are different, people react differently to different things. But here's what it says about sensory overload, and see if you recognize yourself in here. Sensory overload occurs when one or more of the body's senses experiences overstimulation from the environment. There are many environmental elements that impact an individual. Examples of these elements are urbanization, crowding, noise, mass media, technology, and the explosive growth of information. Sensory overload is commonly associated with sensory processing disorder and sensory defensiveness. Symptoms. There are a wide variety of symptoms that have been found to be associated with sensory overload. These symptoms can occur both in children and adults. Some of these symptoms are irritability, shutdowns, or refuses to participate in activities and or interact with others. Some of us would call that isolation. Avoids touching or being touched. Gets overexcited. Covers eyes around bright lights. Makes poor eye contact. Covers ears to close out sounds or voices. Complains about noises that do not affect other people. Has difficulty focusing on an activity. Constantly jumps from one activity to another, never completing a task. Irritated by shoes, socks, tags, or different textures. I found that interesting just the other night. For any of you that caught my regular Wednesday night show, actually it was 2 weeks ago, Dr. David Nielsen talked about clothing sensitivity and different people that get bothered by that. First, we were talking about people that get cold hands and cold feet, and then he was talking about a woman patient who had come in and where her bra rubbed her just drove her mad. And then I had recall instantly of turtlenecks and how often I used to wear them, especially in the Midwest winter. And after my brain surgery, I couldn't wear them anymore. They make me feel like I have claustrophobia or something. I just want to rip them away from my neck. And so I thought this was pretty interesting that they added that into sensory overload. Again, that's irritated by shoes, socks, tags, or different textures. Oversensitive to touch, movement, sights, and or sounds. Has trouble with social interactions. Extremely high or extremely low activity levels, muscle tension, fidgeting and restlessness, angry outbursts, sleeplessness, and fatigue, has difficulty concentrating. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I could relate to a lot of those things. And I was thinking about, well, a couple of things. I was thinking about, even in the last week, I won't even go back like the last 6 months because I could think of a whole bunch of things. But, you know, one of the things that I tell you guys that is a tool that I recognize is, and I quote it a lot, is the old tool of HALT, H-A-L-T. And that I always say that any residuals that you have or any problems you have are always worse or accentuated if you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Thus, HALT, the acronym. And I have been really tired lately and feeling a little lonely at times, even though I've been in groups of a lot of people. Angry. I got really angry the other night, last week, and I won't go into the details about that, but just protocol and manners, you know, and sometimes things that wouldn't bother you at all one day when it's sunny and you're feeling bright and everything is cool can be something that makes you want to get out your axe. Lizzie Borden took an axe. What was that old scary movie that was on? You know, you have a bell tower moment on one day for something that wouldn't even bother you that much the other. And you know, I realized that there was, first of all, a lot of activity going on and than I'm used to having. So that leads to that full basket syndrome. My husband and I have kind of been looking a little bit at houses, and actually the idea of moving, and I see that Annie's out in the audience. I know she did some moving, and you know, even the thought of moving just really exhausts me. So even if there was an advantage to us moving, the idea of actually physically decluttering and going through what I'd have to do here to get ready to go there and to get the things done there before I would move there, because we all learned, I think last winter when I was getting my bathroom remodeled here, that I'm not good with workmen, at least not on the job. We can do well negotiating, passing on the street, my friends that are in the business, you know, but when they're in my house, it makes me irritable because, again, there's extra noise when they're pounding and beating and talking and phones are ringing more than usual, and there's just so much more amplification of sensory aspects that I'm not used to. You know, my status quo is, you know, what I'm used to, and that's, you know, the sunglasses on the really bright days, or else I get really bad headaches, and sometimes I love loud music, but it's got to be the right kind of music, and it affects all of our senses. That's why we call it sensory overload. So the other night when Dr. Nielsen was talking about touch and the feeling of clothing on us, sometimes driving us up a wall, that, you know, I was thinking, silly me, this has been going on for 17 years and I never put it together. There are five senses. And so whether it's touch, taste, smell, sight, what's the other? Touch, taste, smell, sight. Vision, right? Yeah. Vision, I think. Anyway, someone can correct me if I'm wrong. But anyway, just lots of busyness going on. And then we've had some new people, and not all of it is bad busy. Some of it's just busy. You know, we've got some new programming coming on the early tiers, and The Early Platform, and I've been doing a lot of training, and that's an activity that's different, that I, you know, that isn't in my status quo, and I've been doing a lot of it and doing some substituting on the shows. And so my regular life and my new kind of caregiver life with the person in my family that's got a problem, and just a lot of things kind of stacking up. And today I really felt like I hit the wall, but some of you who know me might want to check out my both my first personal Facebook page and also my In a Flash page. I keep those separate for a reason, but as some of you might know, last Wednesday on my regular night, it was 9/11, and I did a special 9/11 tribute show. And on that night, and Annie, I'll pick you up in just a second. On that night, I mentioned that I have a new friend here. I didn't know her at the time, but her brother, and it's posted on my In a Flash page, you'll see her brother, very handsome young man who I worked at Cantor Fitzgerald, I believe, but he was in the North Tower, and I thought about it even before I knew Lynn, who lives here, the sister, and she started, we have a memorial park here, and on one end of it, it's a long expanse of grass that you can see from our biggest main east and west running street in our city. You look over to the right and you see Memorial Park, and you see this large bunch of green grass, and up at the top you can see like a monument thing and a soldier on his knee holding a little boy pointing, but that's way up there. The 2 weeks, actually it's the week, the weekend before and then tomorrow they'll be gone, of 9/11. Lynn, in honor of her brother, gets some volunteers and they go out and put out 3,000 flags. And when you're driving up Dodge Street is what it's called, and you look over and you just see this sea of flags. And around each one, there's a tag stapled, and it gives the person's name, how old they were, where they were, who they left behind, and they have them color-coded even. So you can tell the people that died in the planes, the people that were first responders. And, you know, we had Anthea Appeal over on that 9/11 show. She was my featured guest, and she's a first responder who is a New York City police officer on 9/11, and they have the firemen and the rescue workers and the police officers, and then they have all of the people that were in the planes, and then they have the people that were in the towers, and they're all different colors. And then there's a circle in front that has all of the ones from our city, and it looks like there's about 10 of them. And I thought that I would mention, because one of the questions that came up the other night is there was some discrepancy as to whether any children were killed. And one of the things I posted on one of those tags is a family that was on vacation. They were in one of the planes, and I think it was an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old girls with their mom and dad, and their plane plowed into a building and they died. Whole family. That's a hell of a vacation, isn't it? But in any case, that was the sad and moving part of the day. We went today, and when you get close up like I do and you take those pictures, and then you're sitting in the middle, standing in the middle, surrounded by all these flags, and bend down and read the tags, and the ones from here in town in that circle of about 10, a lot of their family members wrote paragraphs about what that person was like, what their life was like, how old they were, things, enjoyment they got out of life, other things, know, angels. There were a lot of angels that said from our arms to God's, and just a really moving experience. And I noticed on my In a Flash page, if you look at it, there's again a picture of Lynn's brother who perished in the North Tower, and then a picture of Lynn on her knees among the flags. And that was last weekend, last Friday, when they were putting him up. And today I was standing there, and this year she hadn't posted his tag, and I found it today and posted it underneath the picture of Lynn and her brother Lynn. Ironically, Lynn, L-Y-N-N, is the sister, and Leonard was his name, and so he went by L-E-N. But anyway, that was a tough show, you know, in the middle of house, you know, doing a little house hunting and starting to feel the change in the temperature, kind of not feeling good and achy joints and just feeling like kind of slowing down and hitting the wall, and all of the training going on and the house going on and trying to want to make a good tribute to 9/11 show. Took a lot of brain bucks, as Penny and Kathy would say. And boy, this weekend I'm kind of sliding into home plate on my face. And so before I got on the show, I knew we were going to play some music tonight and hopefully some people would call in and talk. But I did look up sensory overload because I was feeling it bad and like I should go try to find some vitamin C. But I kind of laughed when I thought of all you guys, because it should be a little early yet, but I put it on a tea kettle to make my green tea before I got in the show, so that I can space it off like I'm famous for around Brain Injury Radio. You guys all listened to it last winter. I'd turn on my tea kettle and I'd come in the other room and then forget about it, and y'all would be hearing the whistling, and y'all busted me. And so I start seeing in the chat room, oh, green tea time. Oh, Kim's into her green tea. And so I thought about y'all tonight and smiled, and I made my first batch of tea, and hopefully it'll stay warm so I don't have to repeat my performance. But I'm kind of just, I don't know, kind of sore and kind of congested and kind of overloaded. But I'm here. I'm here with you. I see we have a couple people that are ready to talk, and that is great. And then when we're ready to kick back and take a break, I've got all kinds of really good music. I've been really talky in a lot of my shows lately. And, oh, you'll be hearing it, Annie. Annie says she's been missing that tea kettle. Feels like we're going to have winter early. Feels like we just got over winter. I feel like I'm going to be having a perpetual tea kettle. I switched to my iced tea for 2 months, and it seems like we're back there again. But in any case, this is one of our UK contingents, the wonderful Annie Ricketts, and I hope she's going to tell us a little bit of the status of the global picnic, as well as maybe talk about sensory overload or anything else that's on her mind tonight. Really good to see you, Annie. How you doing?
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. Kind of worn out.
Oh, that's really sad to hear. I'm just full of energy myself, so...
Can I borrow some?
Yeah, I've got loads. My cup is overflowing, as always, Kim. Mm. You were talking about the sensory overload thing, and I'm... 13 years and almost 2 months after falling on my head, and I still wear sunglasses, but even on a really dull day, I will still even wear them in the rain. And you know, the light outside really bothers my eyes. Light inside doesn't bother my eyes, which is really strange, because I can handle I don't know, these fluorescent lights and things like that, they don't bother me at all. But go outside in the daylight and I'm stuffed.
Maybe you're a part vampire too.
person that's ever said that to me in my life, but maybe.
You just never know. Well, no, that's interesting. What about the other things? You know, a lot of us talk about the hearing and the vision. You know, one of the other hosts and I one night were talking about casinos really drive us crazy because there's all that noise and the strobe lights, and that really bugs us. But the other night, I don't know if you caught the show with Dr. Nielsen, but he was talking about clothing. And like I said before, I was thinking, well, yeah, we do have five senses, and I've always been so focused on the visual and the auditory that when he brought up things, and the example he brought up was a patient he used to have that claimed that her brassiere felt like it was strangling her, and she was just very uncomfortable with that. She couldn't wait to get home at the end of the day and get that off, and she'd kind of relax and feel calmer. And then I recited to him, it was like a light bulb went off that, you know, I used to wear a lot of turtlenecks, and that sometime after my surgery, and mine was 18 years ago now, I could no longer stand a turtleneck. It would almost give me anxiety in a department store when I'd go by the rack, but let alone put one on, and I've got my hand in there just kind of pulling it off my neck, you know, and that'd be the touch. Have you ever had anything like that with any of the other senses? What would it be? Taste, smell, and touch?
Yeah, well, I know certainly children with autism have a particular thing with clothing.
Yes.
Yeah, and obviously it's something to do with the brain and the way that the brain works or doesn't work. But personally, no, I haven't had a problem. But interestingly, when you talk about, I can't remember how you pronounce it, but a bra, women having trouble with bras. There was something on, I think it was BBC Two Radio, about 6 weeks or 2 months ago. And they have women on there talking about wearing a bra or not wearing a bra and whether it would give you, you know, better uplift in later life and things like this. Mm-hmm. And, your comment on that made me think of that rather than brain injury causing problems with things fitting or not fitting or feeling comfortable or not feeling comfortable. But I can't wear shoes very well at all now. I hate anything being on my feet, which I never had before. And I wear flip-flops even in the rain and in the winter. And people look at me and they make comments. And I mean, now I am, you know, sort of recovered enough to be able to make sense of those. But I can remember even last winter, a chiropodist, the husband of a friend of mine, looked at my feet and he said to me, he said, "Your feet must be really cold." And I couldn't understand what he was meaning or saying, because to me, wearing flip-flops in the winter was completely normal.
Sure.
This is like, and it took me about 2 or 3 weeks, and then I suddenly thought, oh, of course he was looking at my feet. I was wearing flip-flops in the middle of winter, you know. And any Australians that are listening, those are thongs. But, yeah.
Right.
I mean, obviously something completely different. We were back into the underwear department for those of us in the Northern Hemisphere. But it just didn't occur to me that it would be odd. It didn't occur to me that it would be odd at all. And then I had, I started work again back in April for the first time after, it was almost 13 years after falling away.
And, what are you doing? I saw that you got a job, but I guess I missed the detail of what it was. Congratulations, and how is that going after so long?
Well, I'm now in a different job, but anyway, back in April, I got this job working for a sir and a lady at a medieval hall up in Lincolnshire, and absolutely wonderful people, and you know, the job advert kind of said, you get living accommodation, and all we need from you is traditional skills. So I'm thinking, well, I can dust and I can hoover and I can shop and manage all those things on my own now, you know, like I can do this.
Right.
So anyway, so I went up there and, I had the interview and then went up there to start the job. And they stuck me in the kitchen on the first day.
Oh, God.
And I'm thinking, oh, no, what am I going to do? So anyway, I managed to cook lunch. And this went on, you know, the next day and the next day and the next day. And, I ended up being the cook. I was the cook. And I thought, you know, I explained to her that I had a brain injury and, you know, I had said nothing at all about cooking in the advertisement. So, you know, I would never have applied for it, not in a million years, because cooking was one thing that I really couldn't get back to after my brain injury. I found it really, really difficult. I found it really difficult to read recipes and understand what they meant. And synchronize the, you know, I've put in the fat, I've put in the sugar, I've put in the eggs or whatever.
Right.
I just couldn't get those things to go into my head at all. And it didn't matter how many times I read a recipe, it meant nothing to me. And, I just kind of like blind my way through things. But before I fell on my head, I was quite a natural cook. So I would just throw things together and it would just always come out beautiful and, you know, everything always came out really well and never had any accidents in the kitchen, i.e. burning or setting things on fire. But after my brain injury, it just all went. It was just like with so many other things, it was like the cloth was taken to the blackboard, the wet cloth to the blackboard, and it was all wiped away. Cooking. And it was just the most incredible experience because, you know, I had to do it. You know,
mm-hmm.
got to.
That's amazing that you didn't even apply for that. And you're doing it, for God's sake.
Yeah, so I just think, you know, somebody upstairs has a lot more wisdom than I do. And, you know, I always remain very open to, you were talking about angels earlier. And I always remain very, very open to angels helping me, to higher wisdom helping me, and, my own higher wisdom helping me. And I don't ask too many questions, so I just kind of go with the flow as best I can. And, that's something also that I lost with a brain injury and has come back. So, because I lost all of that understanding and that knowing and that intimacy with the energy of the universe, but... So here I am in the kitchen cooking and
in your flip-flops.
I was never in shoes. I can't bear wearing shoes. So I got into it, and a few days later, you know, every day my cooking just improved and improved and improved and improved, and it got to where I was just left on my own. That old, the only word I can think of is talent, but that's completely the wrong word because I was never talented. But that old je ne sais quoi, that ability to be able to provide something out of something and, provide a rich nutritional meal out of raw ingredients, you know, for a family, just came back.
Wow.
And, it was amazing. I mean, one day I did crepes. This is a hilarious story. And one day I did these crepes with a chicken and tarragon sauce inside.
Mm.
And I made four of these crepes. And two were put in the larder to cool down, ready to go back into the fridge. Anyway, when I came to put them back in the fridge, the two crepes that were in the larder had disappeared.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they completely disappeared, and we couldn't fathom where they were. And I saw the housekeeper, and I said to her, I said, do you know where these crepes have gone? And she said, no. She said, I saw them on the shelf in the larder. And I said, well, I know, you know, that, you know, after I'd served them up and the dishes came back, I said, and I was told they were excellent. I said, but I can't understand where these other crepes have gone. So the chat is then going around the house. You know, this medieval house has got 17 bedrooms. It's got a great big medieval hall with suits of armour and, you know, the whole kit and caboodle with a minstrel's gallery and everything else. So, you know, I'm talking to all the other staff and I'm saying, my pancakes have disappeared. My pancakes have disappeared.
Good Lord, where's your food gone?
You know, I really own these things, you know, because I've cooked them. They're apparently excellent and they're mine, you know. So obviously, you know, they're going to be dished up at some later date or somebody's going to have them as leftover. So,
but the house have a dog? A big dog?
No dogs. We've two cats, but no dogs. And the cats can't get into the larder. It's all bolted up. So anyway, the next day I find out the son has possibly got into the house. So I said to the son's wife, I said, what did you have for your tea last night? And she said, oh, we had these delicious pancakes. She said they were absolutely out of this world. Well, these pancakes...
Oh, my God.
Went on for about 4 months, and apparently everybody in the country had been phoned out these pancakes to be told how delicious they were. And everybody that I was speaking to, oh, I've heard about the pancakes. And I said, well, I was ready to phone the pancake police.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and it was just amazing. It was an amazing experience, and it really, really boosted my confidence. And it just enabled things that I'd really thought were just completely wiped out to just naturally come back. And that was quite amazing to me, Kim, because everything else up until that point, I felt as though I had to completely relearn. You know, I felt that I had to learn things completely from scratch, like a small, small child. And, right. You know, with the cooking, it wasn't like that. It was just like the more I used it, the more I tapped into what I had before. And the more I used that, the more it worked. It was an amazing thing. And I can cook again.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's really interesting to me because, you know, I just actually posted something on Facebook actually about my sense of direction, which is another sensory thing. And before I fell on my head, I had an amazing sense of direction. I was just like a homing pigeon. And I never had any fear of anywhere I went, anywhere in the world. And could always find my way home, always find my way back to where I'd started, always find my way to where I wanted to be without even having a map. You know, I was just, you know, it was an incredible sense that I had of direction, and I completely and utterly lost it. It was completely gone. But that, again, in the last 2 months, has started to come back. And I'm where I'm now living with this current job is 3.5 miles from the nearest main road. And it's a little network of tiny little lanes that only one car can get down at a time. And it's got little passing places where you have to pull over or you have to reverse back into and things like that for cars to get past each other. And I've only been shown, you know, the way down these lanes once when I was following somebody. So I wasn't really taking any notice because I was trying to follow somebody. And I did it on my own without any trouble at all. And that, to me, was just totally amazing. And I thought it's because that being able to smell where I am again is working.
That's amazing. Well, it's a good testimonial, you know, because when we've heard, and I do want to say that I did unmute Les Paul. He's been here with us girls, so I was going to let him weigh in on things too, just in case he popped in. I didn't want him to startle you, but, you know, that, and welcome Les Paul. But isn't it interesting because we used to hear that, you know, the doctors would say that the most, you know, recovery or regeneration we'd get would be in the first year. And if it didn't come in that amount of time, that was probably what we're left with. And now you're telling some pretty phenomenal stories about a long ways
she
down
sure
the
is.
Road and quite a few
absolutely.
Things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of the stuff that doctors tell us is almost like complete myth. I don't know how you feel, Les Paul, but it's just not true to the experience.
Well, when did you say your smell started coming back?
Well, my smell. No, my I talk about smell as being an instinct.
Okay.
Being able to smell where I am, as in an instinctual. Of sense of direction and things, and I use it to talk. I use smell to talk about how I feel about people as well.
Okay, I missed part of it. That's why I didn't get that.
Yeah. So, for example, Les Paul, you and Kim both smell good.
I smell pretty well, I guess you could say.
Yeah, but not in a literal sense, but as in an instinctual sense.
Yes.
I use smell really to describe a way that my instinct works.
It's almost like a metaphor to explain what you feel. Yes, I see.
Yeah, I follow my nose.
I like that.
So, but my sense of smell is another thing, actually, because of the cooking, Kim. One thing that I did completely and utterly lose with my brain injury was my sense of smell. And when I started cooking again, somebody, one of the people that I'm friends with on Facebook put on there, how can you cook if you can't smell any? And I said, well, I'm going to have to think about this. I'll come back to you. But I guess there was no instant thought on it. And I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. I'll think about it. So I went into work the next day, and I realized that the lady that I was working for, literally a lady, titled lady, and she used to say to me, always taste, Annie, taste, 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 taste. And she used to run cooking classes at the medieval hall, and she used to have cooks there like Mary Berry and all the top famous chefs. So it's always about, taste, 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 taste. But I realise that when I taste something, I can't take a tiny bit on the end of a teaspoon. I have to take a little bit out on a big spoon into a bowl, let it cool down, and then have a good mouthful. And I have to hold it on my tongue before I can taste it. And I have to have, two or three spoonfuls before the taste really comes through to me. Once it starts to come through, I've really got it. But I realised that, my taste wasn't working as well as it had previously, which was obviously due to the lack of smell. But since I started to notice it more, the ability to smell has started to get better. It's not brilliant, but it has certainly started to get better because I've been practicing with smell. And it comes back to, the things that I talk about in my book is practice, 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 repeat, repeat, repeat. If you want to do something after a brain injury, aneurysm, whatever, then, just keep repeating things and keep putting it into your brain. This is what I want to do. This is what I want you to do. This is brain.
Yes.
Talk to your brain. Tell your brain what it needs to do. And it will start to respond. Your brain really, really, really wants to help you, And I think that is so, to me, is so brilliantly interesting that it does respond. It actually does respond. And, I can remember waiting for a year, two, 3 years sometime for my brain to respond to something I'd asked it to do. But now if I ask it to do something, sometimes it takes a day or two, three, four, 5 days. Sometimes it takes a few weeks. Sometimes it takes a few months, depending on how dormant that ability has become. But it definitely comes back. The whole lot comes back. And that, to me, is just, it's amazing. And I still enjoy it the whole time, just watching myself. I'm still enjoying every single moment of seeing myself recover.
That's pretty cool, though. I mean, a couple different... The first thing that I'm, bowled over with was the choice of some of your sophisticated cooking. I mean, my God, crepes and stuff. So it wasn't like, you know, PB&J or mac and cheese or any. I mean, you're really making
or TV
some
dinners.
Yeah, like some really impressive sounding food, like you're a intercontinental chef or something. I was like, good God. But also, it's just very encouraging.
A wild duck, totally tender. And that's the thing to do. So, yeah, but I've done pheasant and all manner. I've done, you know, mooses, salmon mousse, and all manner of things that I wouldn't, you know, lemon meringue pie from scratch, you know, without a packet.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Oh, my God. You're getting us all
hungry.
You're hungry.
Yeah.
Well, that is so cool. It's also an unintended, you know, one thing I've always noticed when I've done something I've had hesitation about, you know, like going to get that job, you had to have some fear and you know, a little bit of anxiety, even if it was excitement from having been out of the loop for so long. And one of the unintended consequences of, you know, you taking that action is these things that you're talking about now. You know, it reawakened some of your senses, and I thought it was interesting about, you know, laying the tongue on your food on the tongue for a while, because that probably like tickles your taste buds awake or something. And
it takes a while.
That's really interesting. Very interesting. Well, I'm really happy to hear about that, because, like I said, I know there has to be some, you know, just a little bit of angst when you're any kind of change, and it's been a little while, you know, since you've been out of the loop, and you wind up doing a job function that wasn't even what you signed up for, and it winds up awakening a couple of your senses to much more than what they've been for years. So never say never. Maybe one of those, probably going to be on one of the famous cooking shows. God, every time I go into I don't know how you guys are where you live, but in our place, we got all these, you know, nail parlors on every block. And when you go in, nobody speaks English for the most part. And they have television, big screen television in front of you on. And the place that I go, I don't get it. It's all in English. These gals can't describe it, but it's always a cooking show. And my impression of it is, good God, there's a lot of cooking shows on. I can't believe that the market facilitates that many cooking shows, but I bet it's going to be Annie Ricketts on one of those shows. One of these days I'll be getting a pedicure
like
and go, oh my God, it's Global Annie.
You know, it's funny you say
that. The Annie Ricketts Show. I hear that title already.
Yeah. Last year, March, not this year, but last year, so almost a year and a half ago, I went to the International Brain Injury the Conference up in Edinburgh. You know, mm-hmm. Word finding there. You see, that aphasia still gets me sometimes.
Yeah.
And I met John Butler there. Who is he's an author of another book, another brain. He's a mild traumatic brain injury survivor, and you know, and he always had this thing about, you know, right from the word get go, that I could cook, and I could never work it out. Where did he get his idea from? he comes out with these most amazing ideas. He's really creative. And that creative part of his brain is still working, whereas some parts of his brain are not. And I'm sure that John wouldn't mind me speaking in these terms.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he always say to me, you know, we've got to get you cooking on the TV to teach people with brain injury how to cook again. And I used to look at him and think, but I can't cook, John, you know. Not, you know, I mean, it used to be used before, but I'd never told him the story that I could before I fell on my head. You know, he just somehow knew. I don't know how or why or whatever. And now I laugh at it and I think to myself, you know, John, I've really got to email you and say I can cook.
That's really a hoot, though, because you'd have your own special niche to have a cooking show. You know, Annie the Brain Case Ricketts whipping it up tonight. Yeah, any of those. I mean, God, you really are. You're going to be a famous TV cook.
Yeah, so that was all quite funny. But coming back to something else you said, Kim, was you were talking about moving.
Mm-hmm. I know you know about that, too.
Oh, is that part of your fatigue?
Sorry,
for me, I was just saying thinking about it, even thinking about it is just exhausting me. I'm feeling like I have doubt if I could even do it. And I just said I knew Annie's moved in her recent past, and so I figured she understood.
Now, I can tell you how to handle this. Right, now, before I fell on my head, I would swear to God that I was born knowing, you know, and that sounds like a really weird thing to say, but I was born knowing how the world works, and I was always very laid back, and I was one of those girls at school, and even from about the age of 8 or 9, where other kids, boys and girls, would come to me and they'd tell me about their problems, and I'd know the answer. I'd just know how they need to deal with it or solve it or whatever.
Sure.
I just had this knowing thing about me. So I always lived this life in a comfort place,
mm-hmm,
of faith, not in that I needed to ever look for faith or to have faith, but I was in faith the whole time.
Right.
And I knew how the world worked, and I knew, when to ask for help, and I knew that help would always come if I asked for it, and so on. And, it's quite an amazing thing. But when I fell on my head, that whole knowing thing was taken away from me. And it comes back again to that description of a wet cloth taken to a blackboard. It was just wiped out. And I can remember about 6-7 years in to the brain injury and falling to my knees one night, Kim, and just begging God. And it suddenly dawned on me, as I was begging God in on my knees, crying my eyes out, you know, literally that sob from real deep down, you know, that I'm so lost. Please tell me who I am. And then it's just bang like that, bang. I thought, oh my God, I forgot to ask God.
Mm-hmm.
I've forgotten to ask all these years. I forgot that He was there. I forgot that you know, this universal power is there if I ask it.
Right.
You know? And that was like the most amazing step forward for me, because from there I could start to build back up everything that I'd had before.
Right.
And
I agree with you totally about that. There's a time when we're ready, you know, when we're brought to our knees and don't feel like we have the strength to move again. And I put a quote in my book. It was the one by Mother Teresa that says, God will never give me more than I can handle. I just wish He didn't trust me so much. And that's always made me laugh because I can really relate to that. And it's interesting that you're talking, it sounds like, you know, you were very intuitive before your TBI and that got erased. And it's interesting, I hear it in the reverse as well, that people, at least if they were, they just weren't really aware of it, but they became aware of having that skill after their TBI. Now, as far as like the cooking, I stunk at it before, and I'm even better than that at it now. So my favorite recipes are reservations and carry out. But I admire your fortitude that you've been having. I mean, that's a lot of big changes too for somebody with a brain injury, that the difficulties you were having before that precipitated these changes, and then, you know, the going through the moving and the stuff that surrounded that, and then going into the job market after such a long time and then getting asked to do something you didn't sign up for. I mean, even the good things and the bad things, no matter what it is, there are things that are new to your status quo that kind of start as you toss each one in the basket. It can get a little overwhelming and kind of run you down. But it sounds like you're just peppy.
No, but actually I'm flying in a way, because it's really reiterating everything that I know I knew before.
Mm-hmm.
In so much as that I know that everything that happens is a gift.
Right.
Everything
absolutely.
Is a gift. And absolutely as a gift. Exactly the way that I did before I fell on my head. And mm-hmm. Very, very open to, even though me within my brain, with that little voice that talks to me in my head, that can do fear, but my overall self never does fear. It's impossible mm-hmm. for the spirit of any human being to do fear. And, we all have that within us, Kim.
Sure.
And it's about realigning that balance between, the ego, which I think is a very, very useful tool, by the way. I'm not one of these people that, thinks it's something that should be shoved to the side or be overcome or anything like that. I think it's a brilliantly useful tool. And I think so for, because of my brain injury, and that's a really, really long story. I won't go into that now, but... I've just welcomed all of these things that have happened to me, and I've just always thought to myself, well, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't meant to be. And it's about
the
whole thing is it's mm-hmm. about what you believe. What you believe will make your brain think in a certain way.
Right.
So that's right.
If you believe that you can't do something, then you're not going to be able to do it.
That's right. That's right.
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult. You instruct your brain. And if you instruct your brain, this is something that I'm always trying to tell people with brain injury, because I do an awful lot of work with people right across the world through both of the websites that I run, through the Facebook pages that I run and everything else. And people come to me all the time and they're asking me, about various different things. And I'm always saying to them, what you're doing now in your recovery, you need to make sure it's as positive as it possibly can be, because you are rebuilding a self.
Right.
Rebuilding this person that you're going to be after your brain injury. And it's absolutely imperative that you do that as positively as you can, because, when people are working with, through PTSD and depression and, the sensory overload that you were talking about earlier and things like that, and they see it as being a barrier, or see it as being limiting to them, or see it as being something that's really difficult to push through.
Yes.
Instead of seeing it that way, I'm always saying to people, please see it as this is a gift. You can work through this, you will work through this, and you will come to the other side, because you've just got to, it's almost like, pulling the curtains away from the window. Beyond there's just glass and you can see through it. So all you've got to do is just lift the veil. And, the veil is literally just the way that you think. And if you lift that veil, then, you're onto greener grass. The greener grass is always, always there. And it's something that I just, really try to push through to people, is how you think now throughout your brain injury. If you see everything as an obstacle, then you're teaching your brain to actually think of everything as an obstacle for the rest of your life. What you're doing with your brain as it recovers is you're teaching it. And if you teach it that, things are obstacles, then that's what you're always going to be dealing
with. That's right.
You're always going to be having these tough times. And I had this instinct within me, and I always believe that it comes from the personality. And there's a lot of discussion and hoo-ha and everything else about where the personality comes from, but I believe it comes from within your genetic self. So it's genetically built in. So, and I believe that we're all basically made the same. So we're all tenacious, and we're all tenacious because there's people that live where we are, because the whole point about being alive is to survive. Tenacious is about survival. You know, so everybody is actually tenacious. And I don't believe anybody on this planet, whether they think that they're the most shy person or the most pessimistic person or whatever, that's the way that you've been taught to think. But underneath that, there is tenacity within everybody. I totally, totally believe that. And I believe it because when I had my brain injury, and I already described to you that I knew nothing about God or angels or belief or faith or anything else. I had nothing, absolutely nothing within my hands, within my heart, within my soul. Nothing was connected anymore. But I still used to reach, every time I did something well, Kim, Les Paul, I used to reach my hand over my back and I used to pat myself and say, well done, you know. And maybe
that's how you should.
Yeah,
positive affirmations are helpful.
Absolutely. Maybe I just remembered to get the mug out of the cupboard and put a tea bag in it.
You're motivating me. You're getting me inspired right now. I'm fired up now. I was feeling really tired when I came on, like Kim.
Yeah, but I might have forgotten to put the water in the kettle. I might have forgotten to put the kettle on. It didn't matter. I put the tea bag in the cup. Well done, Annie. Well done. Pat on the back. You know,
right.
And I was like with myself for year upon year upon year, and I never, ever, ever let up on myself. You know, and I am absolutely convinced that it was that continual positive feedback to my brain that really helped my brain to say to itself, you know, this I've done well, that I can do again. This I've done well, that I can do again. This I've done well, that I can do again. And when it did it again, I'd say, well done, brain, you've done it again, you've done it again, well done, brain, you know. And I'd keep telling myself, this is a good thing that you've done. You know,
I think those are all really good points. You know, I heard it said once, well, a few times, that fear is the absence of faith. And I think, you know, we all, there's stumbling blocks for everybody. It's whether you just accept the fact that peaks and valleys and stumbling blocks are part of life and they're things to be worked through. And it's not whether or not you're going to do it. It's just how you're going to do it. And then when you were talking about ego, I was kind of laughing because another acronym, I started with the one acronym at the beginning of the show about HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and another one I have. And I agree with you. I think you have to have some ego to persevere and push through. But if you're too much that way and don't have like a reliance on a higher power, then the acronym for ego is easing God out. And when you brought up the point that it hadn't occurred to you to ask for the help for quite a while and things were more difficult until you invited in a higher spirit and that, you know, kind of booted up the faith, which if fear is the absence of faith, then, you know, when you invite the higher power in as a support system, that you're going to have less fear and more faith and more energy to move forward, I think. So I think those are all really good reminders. Excellent reminders.
Yeah, absolutely. And fear is not only the absence of faith, and I can see absolutely where that comes from, but fear is also where most people put themselves most of the time. Because that's the way most people talk to themselves, and they also speak to other people in that tone as well.
Sure.
You know, it's quite normal to be that way. Well, you know, let's lift this whole life up a little bit, and it's not normal to be that way. Actually, normal is to be positive and to be enthusiastic and to be tenacious. And, you know, I think all of those things are actually what are in us you know, literally a genetic level, because I think that's what life is. If you look at a tree or a flower or a seed, you know, it's got to be tenacious, hasn't it, to grow, you know, especially something
yes.
in a desert or something in a swamp or, you know, something in some extreme environment. It's got to be really tenacious to be able to have life. And I believe that all of life is literally tenacious.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah, so stop blaming somebody else or stop blaming yourself or some part of yourself or whatever and just, you know, get a handle on it and think, no, I'm a great person, you know. I'm here to do a great job. And, you know, that's me.
I think a heightened awareness, too, of your environment, because sometimes we're so internally centered, we don't know. Well, there's two ways to look at it. One can be we're overstimulated on the outside. Sometimes we're doing it ourselves by being internally centered. And today, after I was at that 9/11 memorial on yep. the totally other side of the park, there's a rose garden, and when I walked into the rose garden, I looked up, and there was like, God, there must have been like 100 dragonflies, and I love dragonflies, and I never see, hardly ever. I have a memory of when I was a little girl, the only man to this day who still ever got me up at 4 in the morning in my life was my grandpa to take me fishing when I was little. And I remember when the line was in the water, you'd see dragonflies, you know, kind of hovering around the line in the water. And then I've seen them around lakes a couple of times where it's fleeting and they go past. But never, I walked into this rose garden, kind of like an English, you know, type of garden, rose garden, and just happened to look up and, you know, the senses of the smell and the visual and then the touch of the petals of these roses, and I was photographing them. They're on my personal Facebook page. It was just amazing that I looked up and they were just circling like these hundreds of, and I've been photographing the rose garden for a million years and I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
It was magical.
Those dragonflies, butterflies, so many things in nature. If you go back to Native American traditions,
yeah.
and you know, and they have their totems, and each person will have their own personal totem. They will have an affinity with something within nature, and for you, clearly, it's you know, a dragonfly. And a dragonfly, to me, if you see dragonflies and you see lots of dragonflies, then you know that somebody's around you, some energy is around you, showing you that everything's good with the world. And it's teaching you the whole time. I mean, my personal totem is a bear. I just love bears of all kinds. Bears are protectors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, that we hold within us some aspect of that as well. So, you know, I'm very protective of
that
other
is interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you go down, when you guys talk in a minute or I play a song or something, I'm going to go down. I've got those Native American animal totem cards, and I wouldn't mind looking at that. But when you just said something, it registered because I didn't get it before, but I believe in angels and God and miracles and what you just said. And what it made me think of is I had just spent a half hour very emotional in the middle, kneeling in the middle of 3,000 flags of people that perished on 9/11. And I was reading these tags. I was photographing it. I had tears coming down my face. It never gets easier. And then I walked in the rose garden, and there was probably that many. I think those dragonflies were an affirmation from where I had just been walking into the beauty You're right, aren't you?
I actually remember the day 9/11 exactly, which is an amazing thing, because on the 23rd of July that year, I fell on my head. The one day that I remembered above all other days was 9/11. And I'd only just started to drive again, and I don't ask me about driving, because nobody told me not to drive. Now, you can imagine somebody with a very severe brain injury driving. But, shutting my eyes when something was coming in the other direction, driving up banks and, you know, sitting on a hill for, you know, like 3 or 4 hours because I couldn't remember that there was a handbrake and, you know, things like that. There's lots and lots of stories. But 9/11, about a week before that, it was the most amazing thing. I drove past a pub. You know, over here we have pubs, don't you? You know what a pub is, don't you?
Oh, yeah, a bar.
Just checking with my friends.
A tavern.
Yeah. So, yeah, whatever you want to call it. So,
mm-hmm.
And outside they had this blackboard, and on there was this, I think, whether she was called a clairvoyant or whatever, but it was a mobile telephone number, which is about 12 numbers long.
Hmm.
It's quite a long number, 10, 12 numbers.
Right.
Anyway, it stuck in my brain. I actually remembered this number. And I went home and I phoned the number without even knowing why I was phoning the number. This was just before 9/11. And the appointment was made for 9/11. And I turned up that morning at 9 o'clock to meet this woman. And I said to her, something really bad's happening in the world. I said, I don't know what. And the whole conversation led away from me. And then the pub landlord came out and said, oh, have you heard, you know, 9:10, said, have you heard that this is happening? So everything was distracted into that. And it was all unbelievable. It was all very surreal. But my first instinct, and this goes back to the instinct that I had before I fell on my head, that knowing thing that I was talking about,
yes,
was that many people will, it's a really strange word to use, Kim, and I hope that you will all understand, but many people will rejoice in this, in that all of this loss will bring so much faith back to people. In that they know that there were angels there, that everything happened for a reason, that everything was happening perfectly, that God was there at the moment in time, and that it's, nothing's lost, and that these people have chosen what happened to them. And I had this incredible, incredible upbuilding of emotion and of feeling about that moment. And I just felt fine with it. And you remember afterwards, all those stories came out where people talked about so deeply, and they talked about how they knew that it happened for a reason, that they knew that whoever they'd lost had sacrificed their life on a spiritual level for some greater good for the world. And to me, it was just the most amazing experience. And it was after that that I lost touch with that whole thing. But, yeah, that day, I certainly had it. I certainly had that feeling of knowing that those souls, without a doubt, knew that they were sacrificing this life in order to be able to bring a greater richness to those that they believe in behind. And I've never walked away from that thought. I've never moved from that thought. And I know how terrible it has been and how horrific it's been for those families and for the loss and for everything else. But I do believe that the vast majority of people really do feel deep inside of themselves that there was a reason.
Yeah.
That people were doing something, they were really giving something of
right.
An immense nature.
Right, I think so too, and I think it took some of us long. I mean, I've got a strong faith and had a near-death experience when I was in a coma from my rupture, and I believe I know you know, I know where they are and that they were safe and whole and on the spiritual plane now. But just the stark, I don't know if you've ever been violated personally or if your home's ever been robbed, that's violated in a in an intimate way because it's your home. But, you know, then you get violated collectively as your country in the centerpiece, you know, the financial
exactly.
district, the Statue of Liberty, the, you know, that whole thing that represents us in a way. And, you know, the shock was just so... So even though I had, I'm just really glad for what you said tonight because it's just a process in the healing because I had, yeah, I had gone, had been in the flags for a half hour first and then just walked in to take some pictures of the roses in the other garden and I've been there a million times. I've never even seen one dragonfly, let alone a swarm of them up ahead, and I just believe it was those spirits reminding me, you know, it's okay to feel the pain, the grief, you know, in remembering the bad things of that day, but it ended as it should.
You're here to be human. We're all here to be human. We're all here to feel those human feelings, and nobody is ever saying that we shouldn't do because they're so valuable to us. They're so, so valuable to us. And of course, the ego plays a part in those feelings as well.
Sure.
And, you know, the ego plays a part in the anger, and it also plays a part in the forgiveness.
Right.
And, you know, it's so important to be able to look for those signs that you saw today with the dragonflies, and I'm sure many other people would have seen many other different things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you draw all that human energy together for a reason, and you know, without a shadow of a doubt in my mind, you know, the spirit is there and comforting the whole time and sharing what it can. But it will only share what it can. It won't ever do something without us asking. And
I think it's really amazing because I wasn't even going to talk about 9/11, and we can move off of that. But it's funny, Annie, that you and Les Paul both here tonight got it exactly. And I think, you know, the 9/11 tribute show that I did Wednesday, I think that it was a really good show, even though it didn't turn out the way that I planned. But it was interesting because some of the people who called in wanted to go right to the conspiracy theory thing.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that they didn't understand what I was doing, you know,
right.
That everybody can have a personal opinion and take it to George Norrie and Coast to Coast or another person's controversial kind of show. But this was actually 9/11. I told in the beginning of the show that I'd been wearing a bracelet that resembled our old POW bracelets that says, United We Stand. And what I felt like as survivors, whether we're survivors of brain injury or a natural disaster or a tragedy, we have a lot of things in common in pushing through that process. And I was talking about the show I designed was more of a collective spiritual uniting of healing. And so where I had no intention of going was to an angry, controversial place where there's no proof anyway, and it's like being on a treadmill where you're going fast to nowhere instead of straight to all holding hands and bowing our heads in humility and reverence and gratitude that we have each other.
Yeah. To me, Kim, that treadmill is a lower energy thing. It's when people haven't lifted themselves into balance.
Yes.
They haven't found who they are as a whole person or holy person. But they haven't lifted themselves up into to the full realm of what they are. And of course we do meet them. And I, in fact, I don't ever meet them. yeah, it's a bit like, yeah, no dog ever attacks my dog. You know, everybody else has got a story about their dog being attacked by my dog. You know, I just don't do those things. So, I do totally believe, you know, for those reasons that we do create our lives, and that we do invite certain things into our lives and certain experiences. But sometimes certain experiences also come to us because we need them, and because we need to reiterate what we think, feel, believe about life. And you know, that it's everything to me is a gift. So that incoming is a gift, and if it can lift us higher, it's always about lifting us higher. You know, if it lifts us higher, then it's a gift. Everything is a gift anyway, even if it doesn't lift us higher, even if it leaves us depressed or angry or, you know, feeling bloody-minded about these people or anything else, it doesn't matter, you know, because in time we'll come to think differently about things, you know. It's all about everything happening at a perfect time, divine timing.
Yes.
All time. And you know, we only get things when we're ready for them, you know.
And that's another thing you said about the dragonflies, that other people could have been looking and seeing something else. I believe that's true, too, that you get the message that you're supposed to get, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you've seen on my Facebook page, but there's quite a few pictures I've got now of butterflies sitting on my hand.
Yes.
And I have one, No, not yesterday, but the day before, I had another butterfly sitting on my hand, but I didn't have a camera with me. And very few people ever get the chance within their lifetime to have a butterfly sit on their hand.
Les Paul's mom did. That's another thing I can't
believe.
Yes, my
mother got covered with butterflies.
But yesterday,
everyone was so stunned. We were at a butterfly, and we were at a nature park, and we went to a butterfly garden. And they weren't on anybody else, and we didn't know this, but my mother had cancer at the time. She died 3 months after finding out she had cancer. She almost didn't go on this trip we went on together. But we went, and she said, "Les Paul, this may be our last chance." She said, "I don't know, I feel like something's going on with me." And she didn't know what, and the doctors kept saying there's nothing wrong with her. So we go there to Nashville, Tennessee together on a bus, and when we get there, she says, "Oh, I want to go to the butterfly garden. They said, so beautiful. You go with me?" And we walk in there, and immediately huge butterflies, little butterflies, everything started surrounding her and landing on her. They were landing all over her. The people that were there were just, "Oh, my God, look at this. This lady's covered in butterflies." And nobody else was. Not one person had butterflies on her like that. There might have been one or two on somebody, but I'd say 100 butterflies covered her body. I was stunned. I couldn't even talk.
You know they can sense it, don't you? You know that they can sense cancer. And it's
my mother was going, "Oh my God, I can't believe this." She started crying because she couldn't believe it. They were so beautiful all over her, and people took pictures of her, and it startled me so much I forgot to take pictures. Someone has some pictures of it, but I mean it was just amazing. And soon after that, when we came home, that's when we found out she had cancer.
How old was she, Les Paul?
She was 86, but she acted more like 60 and looked more like 60. She was a very young 86. She loved to have fun, wore her high heels up until the age 80 or 81.
Wow. Where was the cancer?
It spread throughout her whole body.
Would you know where
They said it started in her intestines.
Right.
She had intestinal surgery about 11 years earlier. And I took her to the doctor one day because I said, "Mom," and she refused to go to the doctor. She'd been going to the doctor so much. And the doctor actually told her, "You're too old, Mrs. Morgan. That's all the problem is." She was real pale in her face. And I said, "Doctor, you shouldn't have said that to my mother. I'm taking her out of here." And we went to another doctor. And it was just intestinal specialist, and
yeah.
when we got there, within about 30 minutes, the doctor calls me in the room, and I said, "What is it?" And he says, "I love your mother," and by the way, my mother knew her children, the doctor's children, and loved them, and he'd always loved my mom, and so he said, "I'm going to tell you something I've never done before." He said, "Mrs. Morgan, Les Paul, you have approximately 3 months to live, and it breaks my heart, and I've just got to tell you, I love you so much, but live your life the best you can while you still have life." And and she lived about three and a half months after that. She had a very, very fast cancer.
Yeah, can I ask you, Les Paul, if she'd had something that had happened to her in her younger life where she just literally couldn't let go of it, something that she'd ingested on?
Well, she had lost her son, who was 21 years old, and they thought it was a suicide, but there were strange things around it. I've mentioned it before. And she'd never totally let that go, trying to figure out what happened to him, my brother.
That would make sense.
Yes, and she always wanted to solve it.
I feel this is the instinct coming back, but I feel very much that her heart was very imbalanced with what had happened, but she chewed on it the whole time.
It bothered her about her son. It bothered her about my brain aneurysm and brain injuries and things.
Something well inside of her, and I feel that her heart. I hope this makes sense, Les Paul, but I feel that her heart was in affinity with the process of losing her son.
I wouldn't doubt that at all.
Something still chewed in her, but it was lower down.
I've shared this about my father. My father had bipolar and mental illness of several different levels at near the end of his life, and he literally went mad. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. He destroyed our home on the inside. He tried to kill me. He did everything he could possibly imagine. And my mother and I had to move out and go live from one brother's house to the other brother's house until I could find a home for us to live in. And so she had a lot of trauma, and that was in her late 70s.
Yeah.
My father had to be taken to a home and then later to a VA medical center where he died.
I feel that she had a very loving heart that was very forgiving
she
of
did.
Things, but she still chewed on it. She still kept thinking about it. She still kept trying to make it be right in her head, and I think that's what caused the cancer.
I know all the stress she was through in her life.
Yeah, but
yeah, it does. Yeah.
What I'm really trying to reiterate and get across is that it wasn't in her lovingness. You know, her lovingness was so forgiving and so understanding, but she just kept thinking about it because she wanted to make sense of it. And it was that not being able to let go of it.
Oh, she would talk to me late at night. She said, "Les Paul, I am so sorry that you didn't have the kind of father you should have had."
Mm.
She said, "I hope I have made up for some parts of that," and I would say to my mother sometimes, I said, "You're not only the mother I've always wanted and dreamed of, I hate to say it this way, but she was my father too." I grew up with my father. I actually loved my father, but he would, one minute he'd say, "Hey, Les Paul, let's work on the car together," or something like that before my brain injury, and the next he'd be screaming at me and threatening to fight me for no reason at all. I mean, absolutely nothing had happened. And so he would go from one extreme to the other.
And he didn't have the brain injury.
No, he had bipolar and dementia. And I just want to say that I know people who have bipolar who have it under control very well that are just fabulous people. And he was going to a VA medical center at the time, and they kept switching his medications, and that caused him to have severe mood swings.
Yeah.
And that's around all this, when all this happened. We lost the home, everything.
Yeah. But, you know, Les Paul, I totally believe that people like your father, like my ex-husband and other people that I've known in my life, you know, they're still bringing us a gift. You know, in all the negativity and everything else, they're still bringing us a gift. They're still showing us, you know, even if it's showing us how we don't want to be.
Yeah.
They're bringing us a gift. And I believe that totally all the time. And I think that's a healthy way to think about.
It is.
Yeah, all experience.
And I've even forgiven my father, as hard as it was. For many years, I couldn't say I could forgive him. But
yeah.
He had a serious illness himself that he lost control of his mind.
Do you know what I always say, Les Paul?
What?
You never need to forgive anybody unless you've judged them. It's only when you've judged somebody that you need to forgive them.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You've been awesome on here tonight, Annie. I appreciate you being on here tonight. You've helped both of us, I believe.
I hope so.
You're the medicine we needed tonight. I'm just going to share with you guys. Starting yesterday, I started feeling very fatigued, much like Kim was describing hers. It became overpowering. I'm saying, man, I've got to lay down. I laid down for a while. Then I couldn't sleep last night because I went to bed early. I didn't mean to stay in bed more than a few minutes. I was just going to take a nap. I didn't set an alarm or anything. And I woke up about 4 o'clock in the morning. About 5 o'clock in the morning. I said, oh, boy, and I just messed up my sleep. Went back to bed this morning and said, okay, I can't sleep. Got up again around 1 or 2 o'clock today. I said, I just got to take a nap. And 6 or 7 hours passed.
Yeah.
And that was just an hour before tonight's show. I come out of it, or maybe 2 hours before. I said, oh, boy, Kim's got the show. I was saying I had a concert to go to, which is tomorrow, not today. I was all mixed up. I felt like I was wearing my brain injury in a way that I don't usually do it. I felt my brain injury, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, yeah. When you're tired, the brain injury always feels deeper. Without
yeah.
shadow of a doubt, it always has, you know, more shadows. It always has more ghosts, and it always feels like it's coming up from your toes. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it's so important, as Paul, for you know anybody out there, to make sure that number one, they don't drink alcohol. Number two, they don't take drugs.
Yes.
And number three, you know, if they're having to take prescribed drugs, take as few as possible.
Exactly.
You know, talk to doctors about alternatives, because sleep is so important with brain injury. It's so important, and the more good quality sleep you get, the more you'll recover quickly. And
exactly.
It's so important.
Well, I feel so much better right now, but I didn't know if I was even going to be able to come on the show. And I meant to email Kim and say, Kim, I messed up and forgot tomorrow is the concert, but I fell asleep and forgot to email her. And I mean, my body said, Les Paul, go to bed. That's an order. And
I would say for anybody, whether they've got a brain injury or not, actually, I would say to anybody that, you know, if your body is tired, if your brain is tired, go to sleep. You know, listen to it.
Yeah.
Go to sleep. You know, because you might be fighting off some, you know, minor infection. You might be fighting off some major infection at the early stages.
Yeah.
You know, but definitely you always need to listen to your body and to sleep whenever you can. And, of course, yeah, you know, some people have to get up and they have to go to work and things like that. But rest when you come home and allow yourself to rest. You know, it's so important. So important, because you know it's when you sleep that the unconscious mind, the subconscious mind, if you want to call it that, is able to fathom out, especially with brain injury, it's able to fathom out the stuff that's happened during the day. This, you know, Kim was talking earlier about being so overwhelmed, sensory overwhelming of all these different senses. And you know, and the brain cannot take it all on board when it's behaving so slowly. You know, it's as simple
exactly.
as when it's injured, it's slow. And you need more sleep for the unconscious mind to be able to work through it all. And, you know, you really, you know, people out there really, really need to listen to, you know, their body. And their physical body and to their tiredness and to take that rest and not to feel guilty about it, because, you know, I have so many people email me and message me about saying, you know, everybody in my family is saying that we're lazy, and, you know, they're saying all sorts of judgmental and awful things.
Yeah, too many people are judgmental.
Yeah, and it's, you know, this is, yeah, but even for somebody that's not brain injured, you know, it's fundamental
mm-hmm.
that we get our sleep.
Yes.
Okay? So, you know, take that over to somebody that's injured. You know, say somebody that's I don't know, even broken a leg. You know, something we can all see, something that we can all watch, something we all know is going to take 6 to 8 weeks to heal, at least, you know, as long as it's not pinned and, you know, whatever else, you know, a basic fracture. You know, that's still going to tire the body, because the body, the physical, biological body is putting its energy into healing that area. So other areas of the body are lacking in energy.
Yeah.
You know, so
which made me just think sleep is really medication of a natural kind that's the
absolutely.
Best kind. Is,
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it really grinds me, Les Paul, when I hear so many people come to me and they say to me, oh, you know, my doctor says that I need to go back to work. And that doctor has no understanding whatsoever. You know, all they're thinking of is, you know, get them off my list. I don't want to keep seeing them. I don't know how to help them. You know, stop claiming benefits. Stop doing this, stop doing that, stop doing the other.
Yeah.
It's negative, 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 negative. And the doctor should be saying, listen to your body. Listen to your body. Take the rest. I'm going to give you the time off. You know, here it is. You know, take what you need. Because, you know, if you can recover like I have, and, you know, you've been given the time, then, you know, you can go back out and you can contribute to the world again. You know, it's not about what one human being's perceives about another human being. It's about the entire energy mass. Very
That's
much
right.
Like, you know, Mother Nature works on the globe. You know, we know that, you know, in the Amazon rainforest is her lungs, for example. You know, and she's got her own way of working.
Exactly.
And the human body is very much the same way. And, you know, we need to just, you know, it doesn't take away from conventional medicine or people earning money out of drugs or anything else. You know, just lift yourself up a little bit and, you know, think a little bit higher. And, yeah, we've got a long, long way to go.
What you're kind of describing is something about myself. I don't know if I've ever shared it on Brain Injury Radio. There's when I won my car, I'm just using that. This is a term they use. it's called you view. It said that I view life through a different lens. I didn't realize how true that was, and when I was growing up, until I started looking up at the stars. I got a telescope when I was 11 years old, and I would look up at the stars, the moon, the sun, not the sun, I mean all the planets and everything, and it was like I was looking at them 3D. And the more I got thinking about 3D, I would view life in a 3D manner, even though I couldn't always see 3D.
Wow.
But, you know, three-dimensional, like the 3D vision.
Sure.
You can, well,
you trained your brain.
I would look at the moon and I would visualize an astronaut being on the moon and a rover driving on the moon and things like that. And it felt like my mind had the power to visualize that to the point I could see it through my mind's lens. And I know that doesn't make sense to everyone, but all my life, when I look at a new television, I think about the electronics inside of it that make it work. When I look at a computer, I think about the modem inside of it. I've always done this, too. When my father, when he was doing well, he was an electrician, and he was a high-end electrician, and he worked on televisions when he retired, and he would always be taking them apart, and I'd be looking inside, and I said, what's this do? What's that do? What's this? And he the one thing he couldn't do was adjust the color right on a television after he'd been working on one. And so he would always put me down about me being around it. You don't know anything about this. Get away from it. Well, I'd be watching. I said, that picture on that television looks terrible. The color is, people would be purple or red and green and everything would be off.
Oh, my God.
I, I discovered where the color controls on there just by messing around. And every time I got the chance, I would adjust the color on the picture and say, wow, it's got a beautiful picture.
Wow.
I knew nothing about repairing televisions. But that's one little thing I did, and that's kind of what I mean, a different lens. I noticed that the colors weren't right. Or if you look at when you look at a bee on a flower or something, you ever picture it magnified in your head? I do that. I've always done that. I wonder what the molecules inside the flower are like. That's how my brain works. And my brain injury seemed to have magnified that. I'm sorry?
I started doing that last week.
And I do see things that way. And if you magnify down to the very finest micron of the inside of that flower, you'll see the molecules it's made of. If you look into black space is what it's called, where they didn't think there were stars and planets and suns and moons. They've recently aimed the Hubble telescope into what they call black space, which was wasted time, but they did it for the heck of it for 7 hours, and they discovered thousands of new galaxies.
Wow.
Just recently.
Wow.
And that's what I'm talking about. And so how's that tie into brain injury radio? I'm not exactly sure, but our mind has an infinite possibility is kind of
absolutely.
Where I was going with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think Kim's kind of started this thing off with many years ago. And she's developed a conversation that is hopefully going to bring so much hope to other people. And, you know, it might not be quite structured, Kim, but, yeah, I think you've managed to, you know, with all the things that you were talking about to begin with, have brought up all these different subjects and, you know, hats on and everything else that,
Glad I did, because we were supposed to be putting on a tape tonight, and I know people don't like that as much because they like the interaction, and so I thought, gosh, I'm feeling so tired and like I'm just coming down with something and wasn't really feeling up to it, and then I figured I'd play music, and when you started talking, so many things registered about, you know, sometimes when you get the full basket, you're like what Les Paul was saying, you're... perception is off or a little cloudy for a minute, and you need to maybe say it out loud to get some clarity or just have time, space, quiet, or that sleep I haven't gotten you're talking about to be able to assimilate it and get that clarity. But you actually, you know, really helped me by some descriptors that they triggered in my mind. Like if you said half of a sentence in my mind had the next paragraph once you gave me the lead, you know, things that you were saying and hearing what you were saying. So, yeah, I mean, I think things happen the way that they're supposed to, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But I was going to go this other way for one second. It's not really another way, but it was your fault. And so when you guys were talking, I went and got the book. This is one that's your fault. We'll start with Bear, since that was your totem.
Yep.
The bear is for introspection. The strength of the bear medicine is the power of introspection. It lies in the West on the great medicine wheel of life. Bear seeks honey, or the sweetness of truth, within the hollow of an old tree. In the winter, when the Ice Queen reigns and the face of death is upon the earth, bear enters the womb cave to hibernate, to digest a year's experience. It is said that our goals reside in the West also. To accomplish the goals and dreams that we carry, the art of introspection is necessary. To become like Bear and enter the safety of the womb cave, we must attune ourselves to the energies of the Eternal Mother and receive nourishment from the placenta of the Great Void. The great void is the place where all solutions and answers live in harmony with the questions that fill our realities. If we choose to believe that there are many questions of life, we must also believe that the answers to these questions reside within us.
Absolutely.
Each and every being has the capacity to quiet the mind, enter the silence, and know. Many tribes have called this space of inner knowing the Dream Lodge, where the death of the illusion of physical reality overlays the expansiveness of eternity. It is in the Dream Lodge that our ancestors sit in council and advise us regarding alternative pathways that lead to our goals. This is the power of Bear, the female receptive energy that for centuries has allowed visionaries, mystics, and shamans to prophesize is contained in this very special bear energy. In India, the cave symbolizes the cave of Brahma. Brahma's cave is considered to be the pineal gland that sits in the center of the four lobes of the brain. If one were to imagine an overview of the head, the top of it would be a circle. The south would be the forehead, the north, the back of the skull, the west would be the right brain, and the east, the left brain. Bear is in the west, the intuitive side, the right brain, to hibernate. Bear travels to the cave, which is the center of the four lobes. Let's hang on, my flashlight went off. It's almost done. To the center of the four lobes where the pineal gland resides. In the cave, Bear seeks answers while he or she is dreaming or hibernating. Bear is then reborn into the spring, like the opening of spring flowers. For eons, all seekers of the dream time and of visions have walked the path of silence, calming the internal chatter, reaching the place of rites of passage. The channel or pineal gland from the cave of Bear, you find the pathway to the Dream Lodge and the other levels of the imagination or consciousness. In choosing Bear, the power of knowing has invited you to enter the silence and become acquainted with the Dream Lodge so that your goals may become concrete realities. This is the strength of the Bear.
Oh, wow.
Oh, I like that.
But how much does that tune in to exactly what I've been talking about? I haven't even been talking about that, but talking about me and the way that I think and my knowing, and that the bear is my totem, and I never knew any of this stuff, Kim.
I know, it fits exactly. That's why I went to find the book, because when she was doing that, I was like, oh my God, there was a time I was really big into totems, and it's been a long time. I knew I had the book down there, so Les Paul, no offense, I heard your mom's butterfly story, and I knew you guys would have dialogue enough. It was going to drive me crazy. I thought I knew which of two bookshelves in the basement it was in.
Good.
So I took off my headset, left you guys talking. I know. I left you guys talking, and I found it, and I thought,
we had a great time without you.
I'm sure, and that's good. That's why, you know, I opened the studio. It doesn't mean I have to be here. But to read what that says, and it corresponds so much to what, you know, to what she was saying. I just thought that was really, really amazing. That's what made me want to go get the book. When she said Native Americans and totem animals, I was like, oh my God, I've got that book.
See,
I want to see.
But you know, I've always known that the bear is my totem, and I haven't known why. I've just known and accepted totally. And there's so many things about my life that I accepted as being red before I fell on my head. And after I fell on my head, I had to rediscover the whole thing. But you know the really interesting thing, Les Paul and Kim, was everything that I believed before I fell on my head is exactly what I believed when I relearned everything.
Okay.
So say something was, I don't know, 10 cubes high before I fell on my head. Some things became 11 cubes high, and some things became 12 cubes high. But nothing went under 10 cubes high, but nothing went over 12 cubes high. It was always within this little thing. But you've got to remember what I said before was everything was wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
I started from scratch, and it all came back.
That's amazing. That's wonderful.
Yeah, this wasn't about... This was about total relearning from new experience, coming back to that. This wasn't about, like I described before, with my sense of direction that's just naturally come back after 13 years, you know, and you know, I can smell my way again. You know, I can walk through the woods and know what's north, what's south, what's east, what's west. And, it's totally, totally interesting. I think that's...
God, like the back of a bear's head.
Yeah.
That's so amazing.
You've got to get your little fingers on the tippy-tappy typeboard now and email that to me, Kim. You know that, don't you?
I'll have to have Gary scan it out of the book tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, he can... that's above my pay grade, but thankfully I married the IT department, as I often say, so... He can scan that into an email that I can send you. I'm not sure that I'm going to be good news, but Les Paul, while I'm doing this, I want you to think about what either what animal has come across your path lately or one that you've always been drawn to while I tell you what it says about the dragonfly. The dragonfly is illusion. Dragonfly medicine is of the dream time and the illusionary facade we accept as physical reality. The iridescence of dragonfly's wings reminds us of colors not found in our everyday experience. Dragonfly's shifting of color, energy, form, and movement explodes into the mind of the observer, bringing vague memories of a time or place where magic reigned. Some legends say that dragonfly was once dragon, and that dragon had scales like dragonfly's wings. Dragon was full of wisdom and flew through the night, bringing light with its fiery breath. The breath of the dragon brought forth the art of magic and the illusion of changing form. The dragon got caught in its own facade. Coyote tricked dragon into changing form, and the shape of its new body became like dragonflies. In accepting the challenge to prove its power and magical prowess, dragon lost its power. Dragonfly is the essence of the winds of change, the messages of wisdom and enlightenment, and the communications from the elemental world. This elemental world is made up of the tiny spirits of plants and of the elements air, earth, fire, and water. In essence, this world is full of nature spirits. If dragonfly has flown into your cards today, you may have forgotten to water your plants. On another level, you may need to give thanks to the foods you eat for sustaining your body. On a psychological level, it may be time to break down the illusions you have held that restrict your actions or ideas. Dragonfly medicine always beckons you to seek out the parts of your habits which you need to change. Have you put on too much weight? Or have you started to look like a scarecrow? Have you tended to the changes you have wanted to make in your life? If you feel the need for change, call on Dragonfly to guide you through the mists of illusion to the pathway of transformation. See how you can apply the art of illusion to your present question or situation and remember that things are never completely as they seem.
Wow.
I just want to say real quick, like, we have, if anyone wants to call in, pick up your phone and do so right now, 424-243-9540. I hear the 60-second point. We will roll over into overtime, I think, but just in case, for all of you who are staying or would like to keep listening, you can hear it in the archive after. But if you want to stay here live, quick, 424-243-9540. And if any of you are leaving right now, thank you so much for being here on the program tonight and listening. Hope you've been able to take something away from it, and we all appreciate your support on Brain Injury Radio. We want to thank our sponsor, Gordon Johnson of TBI Law, tbilaw.com. And that should take us to 5, 4, 3, 2. I hope everybody has a great rest of the weekend, and so happy that you could join us tonight for some of the best shows are the least planned, that just have
true.
A flow of their own spontaneity. So that's pretty awesome. And we're in overtime. Okay.
Great. So that's cool.
You had a question for me. I'm trying to remember what you said.
I want to know if you've got a totem now. Like, questions.
We got to know. Yeah, now I got to really think about mine, but transformation and change, that's true. There's some things like that, you know, moving, and there's the literal and the, you know, the literal and the other word, one that's not literal. Oh, well. Les Paul, I was saying, is there an animal that you've ever particularly felt drawn to in your life, or one, if you thought about it, that has crossed your path recently? Like I've always liked dragonflies, but today they crossed my path in droves. You might have been driving down the street sometime in the last week or couple of weeks and seen a certain kind of bird fly ahead, or taken note of an animal you might not have noticed on the side of the road.
Well, I don't know if you remember me telling on the show a couple of times. When we were having all the heavy rain we had, and we had almost 2 months of nonstop rain in the past 4 months. And maybe three
crazy.
Months. And it brought out animals I've never seen before in my area. For instance, you never see an armadillo in Aiken, South Carolina.
Oh, my
but,
God. You're not going to believe this. Go on.
What? Okay,
I was holding the cards, putting the bear and the dragonfly back in, and I opened it up like when you cut cards just for that H-E double toothpick of it. The armadillo was sitting there. I thought it Texas. I never thought you'd say that. And then your word said armadillo, and I'm like,
back.
No way.
I'll tell you, Kim, as well, my first thought there was that was Les Paul's first instinct. You know?
Yeah,
say that one more time.
Naturally flowing with his first instinct.
Yes,
okay.
Your first instinct. It was the first thing you
I
came
had
out
two
with.
Different animals that I don't usually see. I was walking my dog both times. His name's David, and I was taking him out. We're walking around the yard, and I heard something digging. And I turned my head, and right beside my house, there was an armadillo digging, trying to get up underneath of a ramp that I had for my mother. And I turned, and he runs across and ran right towards my dog. And it scared me to death. I'd never seen one. He was gray and silverish colored, very big. And he ran around to the backyard, and I followed him. My dog was about to lose his mind barking at him. He's not that big of a dog, but the armadillo is almost as big as him. And so I never found it again, but I saw one jug a little bit. And it sent shockwaves up my back because I said, an armadillo here? I've never, ever seen one here. I'm sure
I've
there must be somewhere.
I thought they had that in your area.
Say that
That
again?
Is so weird. She's right, though. It was your first instinct.
Yes.
Armadillo.
The other one was a fox. The other one was a fox. I was in my yard another time about a week after that, and I'm standing there with my dog, and he's doing his business, and right in front of me, a fox runs right past my right and runs maybe 20 feet from Bandit and me. Bandit never saw the fox. He was so fast. He shot across the road and ran into the bushes and disappeared. I'm saying, get him, Bandit. Bandit's saying, I don't see what you saw.
The thing is with the totem is that, like anything else in life, it can change as you develop.
Mm-hmm.
So you may be born with another totem, i.e. the fox. But
right.
The armadillo has become...
It was your first thought. It was in front.
Yeah.
That one really stuck in my mind, too. You notice I said it immediately because
yes.
An armadillo in my front yard. I mean, I was just floored when I saw that. I went
looking for him all day, the next
day, no sign.
That'd be a reason, just like there's no reason I would find that many dragonflies. The armadillo is for boundaries.
Really?
Armadillo wears its armor on its back, its medicine a part of its body. Its boundaries of safety are part of its total being. Armadillo can roll into a ball and never be penetrated by enemies. What a gift it is to set your boundaries so that harmful words or intentions just roll off. Your lesson is in setting up what you are willing to experience. If you do not wish to experience feeling invaded, just call on armadillo medicine. A clue to how to proceed is to make a circle on a piece of paper and see it as a medicine shield. In the body of the shield, write all that you are desiring to have, do, or experience. Include all things that give you joy. This sets up boundaries that allow only these chosen experiences to be part of your life. These boundaries become a shield that wards off the things which are undesirable to you. The shield reflects what you are and what you is and what your will is to others on an unconscious level. Outside of the shield, you may put what you are willing to experience by invitation only. For example, a visit from a long-lost relative or criticism from friends or people needing handouts. If an armadillo has waddled into the cards you choose, it is time to define your space. You may have been too willing to let your home become a bus station. You may find that you cannot say no, even when you know you will have to cancel plans to be obliging. This routine can get very old in a hurry. It may be time to ask yourself the following questions. Am I honoring the time I need for my personal enjoyment? Do I allow others to treat me as a doormat? Why do I always get upset when I'm taken for granted? Is there a reason for my being a yes person? All of the answers to these questions relate to setting up boundaries, what you will and won't do, what makes you feel uncomfortable, and what is comforting to you. How you react in any circumstances has to do with your ability to be objective. You cannot be objective if you cannot tell where the other person's personality stops and where yours begins. If you have no boundaries, you are like a sponge. It will seem as if all the feelings in the room, room full of people, must be yours. Ask yourself if you're really feeling depressed or if this feeling actually belongs to the person you're talking to. Then allow armadillo's armor to slice in between, giving you back your sense of self.
Wow.
Do you know what really strikes me about that?
Hmm.
Is Les Paul being the Southern gentleman.
I know. I was going to say, you know what strikes me about this is I know him.
I was told by my girlfriend last week, she said, Les Paul, you've got to set more boundaries up. You let too many people ask things of you and you just go do it when you don't know you don't have time. She said that just last week.
That's why the armadillo jumped out front.
So when you said, how did the armadillo thing come about? Because it startled me when you said that. when you saw it, I mean, you know, I said armadillo. I'm trying to remember what you said.
Like, have you ever played, you know, playing cards with someone, poker or something, and you cut the deck?
Yeah.
I was just, it was a response where I took our bear card and our dragonfly card, which I had already read. I was going to put them back in the pile, and I cut the deck. And where I cut the deck, I glanced down, and I was like, oh, an armadillo. And I put the cards in because I knew that wouldn't, I didn't think that would have anything to do with you. Those are like in Texas. I didn't know them to be in South Carolina. But of all these cards, and I don't know how many there are, I'll have to look in this thing and see. I see one of them here is 41. So we're looking at, you know, let's say maybe 50 cards. I happened to cut it on the armadillo to put back Annie and my card.
That's strange, Ralph.
Yeah.
Your mind readers, help.
Well, Annie's idea. I just happen to have the book. That's so funny, isn't it?
Well, it shows we worked together and it happened, and I just happen to be the culprit that got it.
I told you this energy stuff works.
I believe you after hearing what I just heard. Wow.
Well, they were so right on target for all of us and what we were talking about. It's so amazing, and that I happen to have that downstairs. It's been years since I've done that, you know, since I've looked at the animal cards. I was interested in it in one time. I was doing some different Native American things, and I got those, and I used them for a while, but it's been years. But I could picture when Annie said bear, I was thinking totem, animal totem. Oh, bookshelf, downstairs. And I've got like five, and I could almost picture exactly where they were.
Yeah.
Hmm.
You know, that's what I was talking about earlier, was that instinct that drives, you know, that instinct that makes you know what's north, south, east, or west, that makes it makes the world smell right. And, you know, it comes back. And I think that's coming back.
I want my directional compass back, because I tend to turn left when people say turn right.
Do you know how I practice that, Les Paul? This would be really easy for you. If you hold your left hand up and put four fingers up to the sky, and you push thumb out to the right, what's the letter?
I heard you, four fingers up and your thumb out to the right, you said?
Yeah, on your left hand.
An what? L?
Is it an L? For left, Paul. And L for left. And that's how I taught myself left and right again.
Really? Okay, I'm seeing left and right now. At first I didn't get it, but I got it right away after that. You're very smart.
I really struggled with left and right. I couldn't fathom it at all. But, I mean, even so much as, you know, like driving from where I currently am, I'm not very far from my natural territory. And so I drove down about 10 minutes. 10-minute drive from here is a major route through called the A27, is it? Yeah, A27, M27 running into the A27. And through all those years of my brain injury, I'd run down this route, which I'd done years and years and years and years and years before, you know, over and over and over again. And it should have been plastered into my brain, you know, like the fingernail is stuck on your finger. And after my brain injury, I'd drive down that road and nothing would be familiar. None of the road signs were familiar. Where I was on the road wasn't familiar. I would be absolutely petrified driving down there. And, you know, now, this year, I drive down there and I think, I know this. I know that. I know exactly where I am. you know, but I've spent 13 years driving down that road shaking. And this year I'm driving down that road thinking, I know exactly where I am.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I just think, you know, I mean, maybe the biggest message of the Brain Injury Global Picnic this year for me personally is, you know, I started this out with a point of thinking on the terms of we do recover. There was always something that was there within the message was, you know, we do recover. But, you know, heck, I didn't think I was going to be 2 years on and thinking, you know, I'm where I am. I never imagined I could be where I am right now. Never imagined it.
That's what we all say.
What am I going to be doing next year? Am I going to be designing, you know, like rockets to the moon or something next year? It's just.
Well,
it's
if you do that, I want to go with you then. I love moon rockets.
Yeah, but it's amazing, you know, when it starts to happen, it just. It picks up speed like a snowball rolling down a mountain, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It gets bigger and it gets bigger and it gets bigger and it gets faster and it gets faster and it gets faster. And, you know, it may have taken time to get momentum, but once it's got the momentum, it just keeps rolling.
Yeah.
And, you know, every single day I wake up and I think, you know, well, what's going to be today? And the funny thing is the lady that I now work for, I've only been here 2 weeks. Worked a full week, I think.
About the global picnic, yeah. I wanted to ask you a question or two about it, Annie.
Go ahead.
My local support group wants to do a global picnic.
Yeah.
And in North Augusta, South Carolina, where we have our group meeting. We actually were going to do it in a park that was really nice, and they told us that all of the places already taken there. It had a grill and everything. We're going to get together and get people in the community, but there's another one right down the road we're going to try to get tomorrow.
Okay.
And I just wanted to make sure I know what to do to make sure we're on it right.
Well,
give us a commercial, Annie. Give us the date for those who might not have heard about it out there, because I've got a new avenue. I would have had a picnic by myself last year since I knew no other survivors, but
yeah.
I actually connected with the new, there's a brain injury association, I guess it is. Two of them work there, but there's a neurological nurse that just did a walkathon event, and it was the weekend of our granddaughter's birthday on the same day. Anyway, I couldn't go, but I had a really long talk with this neurosurgical nurse the other night she'd been doing it for 20 years and was so touched by the different stories and things that happen in neuro. They're pretty much all bleeds, you know, whether they're aneurysm bleeds or subarachnoid hemorrhages or whatever bleed would be going on in your brain is what they specialize in her area of surgery. But, you know, between her and the association, they're the ones that put on this walkathon thing, and I think it'd be kind of cool, and I could be a connector. They want me to come and talk in March to their convention or whatever. And so anyway, for anyone in the audience who hasn't known about this, why don't you just give us a little backstory on the event? Tell us the date this year, and then answer Les Paul's question, and we'll have it all in the archive for anyone who hasn't caught it yet.
Okay, absolutely. Let me start out, Kim, with just briefly saying that the whole reason that I do any of this was because of a dream. The dream was not really connected to what I was doing before. What I was doing before was I wrote a book called My Latent Self, and it was about my recovery after brain injury, which I wrote 2 years ago, which, you know, needs redefining, but it doesn't need changing,
mm-hmm.
because I still stand by entirely by what I wrote in the book. It needs redefining in as much as I'd really like to split it out into this will help survivors, this will help caregivers, and make it really clear that way. But what I found 3 years ago was that I could not walk away from brain injury without showing what I'd gained, hence writing the book. Having written the book and having set up a website for it, I thought I'd kind of like unburdened myself of that need to that personal need to share what I'd gained, you know, the insights of which there were many. It's not a book about my story as such. It's a book about how other people can gain from the insights. And then I was quite happy to walk away from all of that and to carry on with my life. And I just wanted to be an author. I love to write. I absolutely love writing. I wanted to write children's books, and I'd got a whole host of other ideas, believe it or believe it not. But for this show, one of them was about, you know, a spiritual book and,
okay,
and one thing and another. And then in January 2012, I literally had this lucid dream. Very, very lucid dream, totally out of the blue. I wouldn't believe that it came from my subconscious, unconscious, in any which way, shape or form. I still to this day believe that it came from some higher force. And I could smell the grass, I could smell the trees, I could hear frisbees flying through the air, I could hear children chatting, I could hear, you know, burgers sizzling on barbecues. It was a park.
Jeez.
And
I'm seeing it.
I could actually literally see the leaves waving in the trees. In this dream, it was a dream. And I could see the leaves waving in the trees, in each individual leaf. And it was the most incredible thing. I just sat bolt upright in bed. And I knew immediately, coming back to this knowing thinking that we were talking about earlier, exactly what it meant.
Exactly.
And what it was that I needed to get everybody right across the world having a picnic on one day to raise awareness about brain injury. And it makes me tingle now talking about it. I'm still tingling now.
Every reason.
And this is like, you know, that was January, a year and whatever ago, 9 months ago, 8 months ago, and I still tingle when I talk about it, because it was so phenomenal. It's unbelievable. And anyway, I got up, I got out of bed, and I went out, and I took my dogs for a walk, and it was the most beautiful frosty morning. The sun was just rising. In fact, the moon was still in the sky, you know, in that deep blue where you can see the moon. And then the sun came up and it was all orange and it was frosty and it was beautiful. I've got some fabulous photographs of the day. And I came back, and as soon as I could, I started to post about it on Facebook. Well, I only had a few friends on Facebook at the time. One of them was Marlo Carol Rotundo, if I've pronounced that all correctly. Richard Forrest and lots of other people. And they all came together, and all survivors of brain injury, and said, what a brilliant idea, you know, brilliant idea. Get everybody together on one day, you know, right across the world, and let's raise awareness, you know, because the idea was that if we could do something pretty big, awesome, phenomenal, the media would actually take notice of what we're doing.
Yes.
And, you know, if the media take notice of what we're doing, they're going to report on it. If they report on it, then we're going to be raising awareness. And we're doing it for free, you know. We haven't got to raise, you know, like cancer awareness or whatever, you know, buy pink, you know. And all that money then goes on TV advertising and everything else. And it's millions and millions and millions of dollars and pounds and everything else goes on advertising to raise awareness. Well, you know, they you know, taking nothing from them, they've done a brilliant job. But, you know, the whole idea with the global picnic was we're doing it for free. It costs us nothing, you know. Well, it costs, you know, nothing at all. And, you know, by getting people right across the world, everybody's involved, Brain Injury Association of America, of Brain Injury Association of Canada, headway here in the UK. You know, Craig Cecilia and his group out there, and everybody is behind it. And it's all on the website. So, you know, you can go and look at the, you know, supporting organisations and everything else. But it just came so fast. All this support came so fast and so strong. And we decided to do this first picnic on the 30th of June. Was it 30th of June last year? Because we've all got brain injuries, you know. Of course, we didn't really fathom what it, you know...
But it was going to the temperature.
Yeah, the temperature was going to be, or, you know, there's loads of things. We just thought, oh, yeah, that's a good date, you know, that's fine, we're well with that. But we actually ended up with, it was actually down to Craig and his organisation mostly. We ended up with about 56,000 survivors joining in across the world.
Wow.
For our first year. So, you know, which is absolutely amazing. That's phenomenal. I think if I'd have had four people joining, I would have been blown over. But 56,000.
I'll blow you, really.
You know, my feet still aren't on the ground, Les Paul. So, you know, so this year, the picnic's next Saturday, the 21st of September, this Saturday coming. And, you know, anybody can join in. And as Kim said earlier, you know, you can join in by having a sandwich on your own. You know, come to biglobalpicnic.org and just register that you're doing something. You know, whether it's having a sandwich on your own, you can have open or closed events. So if it's a closed event, for example, like Kim would have had last year, then yeah, it's a closed event. I'm having a sandwich on my own.
Before you go on, you said it kind of fast. I just want to make sure the audience gets it. So you said biglobalpicnic.org, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
biglobalpicnic.org. So that's brain injury, globalpicnic.org,
yep. BI. Got it. Okay, and it's this week?
Yeah, it's Saturday, the 21st of September.
Okay.
So,
Saturday.
Yeah, and anybody can join in. I mean, we started off with this idea that we could go for the world record for the most people picnicking on one day. I think probably 2 or 3 years away from that, to be honest.
Who's ahead of you that would all be picnicking on the same day all over the world?
Yeah, but we could have done it before. But we're just not organized enough because we're all brain injured.
Well, I know, but I'm just curious.
I just figured that
as far as a global picnic, is that who would be ahead of you in line on that? Who else is having a global picnic, for God's sake?
Yeah, there's a company in Spain that did it first. So set the record. I think it was 23,000 people or something. All in one place on one day at a picnic. And
Not global.
So, no, well, Guinness have... that's the way Guinness set it up. It's really weird the way they do their rules and regulations, and we just have to stick with them. And, we don't have any say on that. I've tried hard, but we don't have any say on it. But, yeah, so if our friends in New Zealand start on Friday the 20th, then obviously then that rolls into us being on Saturday the 21st, and anybody in Hawaii would then be on the 22nd, but that still counts as us being the 21st. Anyway, it all works out really weird, but it's all up there on the website as to who can be there when and whatever, but... forgetting the rules and regulations of the Guinness thing, because I really, really don't think we're going to do that again this year. It's too much.
Well, yeah, it's another thing, but you never know how things are going to turn out either. That's pretty cool. I'm glad you came on tonight to talk about it, because, you know, there's people listening out there who may not have known about this. They might have heard about it, but didn't really get the details. So I'm glad when you come on the shows periodically, and especially now a week ahead, you know, people, you know, could actually pull something together like that in smaller groups, or maybe a large group, but certainly a lot more people in a smaller group. You know, they don't have a plan next weekend that we're having Indian summer in these places where fall, like here, where fall will be coming soon, and it's beautiful weather for a picnic and a wonderful way to help raise awareness. And if you, Les Paul's has had extensive experience with the media as well, and I have one gal at
our
major local newspaper. There's really only one. There's a couple rag papers, but I mean, as far as the paper, I think I could drop her an email this week and one way or another pull it together, whether it's the neuro nurse who participated with the two new association people, or I had one of my own to raise awareness in a public spot. I think that would be really cool. And it's easy if you guys go to the website. She's got a great logo, and, you know, you can copy off a piece of paper, you know, the logo on a piece of paper, and maybe, you know, glue it to a cardboard, tape it, you know, a little bit to a piece of cardboard to make it into a sign that people can kind of see. It will draw their attention, you know, to your picnic. If you have a sign sitting next to it, you know, people might also, you know, come over and then ask you what that's all about. And that's kind of the, yeah, not only the incentive for us to do it, you know, as a collective group, but like you said, to raise awareness if you somehow call attention to it by either, you know, and a lot of newspapers have like a local events section, or if they're events
as
of this
television
nature,
stations,
they'll let you do it for free, you know, check with your local paper
for stuff like this. Yeah.
Yeah. Upcoming events, that kind of thing. And if you're able to do that, you know, Monday, it can be in the paper. You know, Wednesday is a big paper here. You know, Wednesday and Sunday are probably the biggest papers here. You know, get it in that Wednesday paper, or possibly, you know, even the Thursday or Friday paper, or have them make an honorable mention on the news. If you happen to know a DJ who works in a radio station in your town, or you've heard their name, drop them an email and tell them what's going on.
They absolutely love it, because they love doing local events. But just to pause you there a second, Kim, I'd really love to ask you and Les Paul a question. And I would like to ask you the question, why do all of us, all of the hosts on Blog Talk Radio, and you two guys, and me, why do we raise awareness? Let's tell the audience why we raise awareness. What are the points? What are we trying to do? Why are we doing this?
One of the big reasons I do it is, you go ahead, if Kim.
I was just going to say, I can make mine quick, Les, because you got a lot of them and a lot more experience. But mine is simply that when I had my brain injury in 1995, there was no support group. And in 2013, there still isn't. And so I fell through medical cracks and went through this whole thing in isolation on my own. It was a very polarizing event. It took 17 years writing a book and becoming a brain a host on Brain Injury Radio, to know that I needed to first start raising awareness with myself, because I thought I was the only one, and there's all of you that understand exactly how my clock ticks, and that makes me want to, you know, some people maybe aren't into support groups, aren't into picnics, whatever, it's a choice, but that's the whole key. I didn't have a choice. I don't want anyone to ever have to go through 7 minutes, 7 weeks, 7 months, 17 years alone and isolated, thinking they're crazy when they're not getting validation from family members or friends or medical professionals. And so I want to raise awareness so people have a choice And they don't have to be alone for a minute with the way peer-to-peer support is growing with Brain Injury Radio. We're in 36 countries and all over the states. We're AM syndication in some places, and all the shows are in archive. Plus, they're working on the on the peer-to-peer support line, and we're adding platforms, so Brain Injury Radio is expanding. And this is the blessed time because two big special interest groups, the veterans and the NFL, are shining a flashlight in a place that's been a void for a zillion years, and there's less to... You know, less statistically of them, but they've got a lot of suck out there in publicity land. And so this is a time where we can make change. I'm sorry, I said it was a short answer. The short answer was I don't want anybody to ever have to go through it the way I did without a choice.
So that's the reason is... You don't want anybody else to go through what you went through.
Right.
Yeah.
I want them to be able to choose. I didn't know I had a choice. I want people to know they have a choice.
Yeah. And where to go.
Yes.
Where to go to find
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yes. Liz Paul, what do you think?
My answers were changing the whole time we're doing it because I've got so many things going through my mind. First, I would say for prevention from other people learning from our stories, hoping that they'll get the knowledge they need to know so that they won't have to go through the same thing that all of us have. We share our stories on a nightly basis. My true hope and the main reason I'm here, and I'm just saying me, we're all here, I believe, for that same thing. I'm not trying to say anybody else isn't. I'm just saying the reason I want to do it is when I went through the hardships and the great tragedies and pain and suffering, no one understood me. And it seemed like no matter what, outside of my mother and my family some, that I was lost in myself. And I wanted to see that prevention and awareness that comes after when you're aware that you have a disability but you don't know what to do, and that's where support comes in, because we need support from people who like peer-to-peer support like you're always talking about and I'm always talking about, Kim, because without someone who's been through the ropes, who's learned through the school of hard knocks, not that I'm anybody smarter than anybody else here at all. I'm not saying I am.
No.
In fact, I beg to differ sometimes.
You're going to be the old delay, eh?
Yeah. And empowerment. The reason I named the second show that I started, and the only reason I took it on when I'm saying, I hope I can handle this is a bit much, is because empowerment is a key word in independent living and for brain injury survivors and all disabilities, really, because we learn how to empower ourselves with knowledge and learning that there are new ways to overcome the obstacles that have been thrown our way. And inclusion, we want to be included in society, and the picnic is a great way to bring together the whole world under one roof or under one banner and say, hey, let's have a picnic together and have a beautiful day like your vision had. I think your vision is gorgeous. I think it's beautiful.
I do, too. I think it was divinely placed, divinely placed
too.
In your sleep.
I think so, too. I mean, coming from me, that's not me saying that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yes, it does.
That's why I think it came in your dream, just like you said. Everything is dovetailed that we've talked about tonight in one fashion or another.
I feel as though it's nothing to do with me. I feel like I'm God's secretary in a way.
The reason I got involved and helped form our very first brain injury support group locally, the Dream Catchers, and now it's a national radio show, is not to be... say, hey, look, I've got a radio show. That is totally the opposite of that. It's because we had a lot of people that had broken dreams and shattered promises and hopes, and I'll never be the same again. And I was one of those people that you would least expect to be here one day on a brain injury radio show talking about that. And so once I started learning all the things, prevention, awareness, support, and empowerment, and inclusion, and that we are people first language. I always mention that on the show at some point. People first language means we're a person, not a disability. We want to be treated as equals. We don't want to be better. We don't want to be like snobs to the world. We want to be equal, not lower, not higher. Say that again.
Accepted.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Accepted. Yep. You know what? You know, you guys are. I'm always filled with humility. Anyway, every time I get an email in, or you know, a message through on Facebook or whatever it is, you know, from somebody asking for help, and it overwhelms me because it was never anything I ever consciously set out to do. And I never intended any of this to happen.
That's what makes it beautiful to me.
I know. None of us did. I've said before, 2 years ago, you would have told me I was going to write a book and be a radio host. I would have laughed in your face. I was a financial consultant for 25 years. From the minute I walked out of college, I only did one thing. So I had no resume. No plan.
I guess that's it. I had no resume, no plan. And, well, actually, my plan was to write. I wanted to be an author. I wanted to write children's books. I wanted to write spiritual works. And I wanted to share those messages that I'd got. I wanted to share spiritual messages to children through books and so on and so forth. That's where my passion was. And where I wanted to go, that's where my intention was. And, you know, I feel like I've been side-railed entirely, but not by anything that's within me, but by something that's far higher than me. And I've worked with that diligently as best I can for the last...
Well, your vision and dream are so beautiful. Yeah. We've got to see it happen, and it's going to happen, and I'm going to do everything I can starting tomorrow to make sure that I can get everybody I know involved with this, including going to a couple of local news stations and getting them involved in it. So I'm going to do my best to get cranked up and go in high speed starting tomorrow.
Yeah, me too. Monday I'm going to call the paper, or I can send the email to the newspaper lady. She'll get it by... Then she'll have it Monday morning in her box. And there are a couple of DJs I know. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
And you just made me think of, it might already be out there, and it doesn't mean to detract from the picnic at all. And we'll repeat that deal. We got about 13 minutes left. But you just made a thought come into my mind, and there might already be one, and I should be smacked if my sponsor has one and I'm not aware of it. But I was thinking of all the different daily meditation books that have to do with either, you know, faith and spirituality, or maybe they're in a 12-step group, or maybe, you know, everybody like Guideposts has a daily meditation book. And I wonder, because it would take for like a long time for one person to write the 365 days, you know, the Brain Aneurysm Foundation just did a survivor's cookbook to raise funds, but whatever. Anyway, they had people, survivors, where they had a little synopsis of the survivor, a picture on one page, and on the next page they've got a recipe. And that was tough for me to get the space for reservations and carry out. But anyway, then the cover of the book is the faces of all of the survivors that put things into the book. And I was just wondering about a brain injury daily meditation book where we all started submitting and sending in. And for God's sake, my publisher right now only publishes brain injury related material.
That'd be beautiful.
Yeah, that would absolutely. Yeah, beautiful idea. Beautiful idea.
Well, I'll work on that more. We'll get through the picnic, but then that might be a goal we could set forth, because I like to write, you like to write, but it would be kind of cool because we're all connected to a lot of pages for either TBI or any kinds of brain injuries. We're all connected here and there, and we have the radio show, and if anyone was willing to write one, I don't know how we'd do it by the day. If they feel strongly about a day, I guess we could give them that one, but otherwise people would just send in. Just send in a meditation page for that date, and there would just be one on each page for each day of the year. And, you know, if they just otherwise, I'd turn it over into God's hands, know it's a good idea, and all the people who sent them in by a certain date, we would just put them together into a book, and it would be by all of us. We figure out how that works and see if, you know, my sponsor wants to get into maybe publishing or marketing that. If they don't want to market it, you know, I've been in that business once with a book and kind of know how to get that done. But I think my sponsor would be a good one to help. It might be a neat idea.
Yeah, you've given me another neat idea, actually, Kim, because you always inspire me. And I was thinking about the question that I asked you two guys earlier about, you know, why do you think we need to raise awareness? And I'm thinking back to when I had that dream, and I had those clear goals defined for myself personally, which have clearly not happened because, you know, other things have happened instead. And but somebody asked me, I think 4 or 5 days ago, maybe 10 days ago, why do I continue with, or why do I do the brain injury global picnic? Why do I do anything? And I said, well, can I come back to you? And this particular lady that asked me the question is a neuropsychologist.
Ah.
And she watches me very closely. She watches the way that my brain works every single day, because I work for her.
Ah.
And she's not practicing anymore because she stopped when she had her children, but she still clearly has that instinct within her. And it's made me think, and I thought, well, you know, I have so many emails, I have so many messages from people asking me for help. People that want hope, that don't have any hope, people that have been abandoned by their families, people
right.
that are in homeless shelters, people that are in prison. And I get messages from all these people, people that are suicidal, I get a lot of. I get a lot of servicemen saying, you know, this is not understood. I actually expanded my personal website, my latent self, to include veterans because of the amount of incoming emails just people asking for hope. And it's built and it just feels like, you know, whatever I might determine for my personal life is null and void compared to what I'm supposed to be doing with my personal life. And I listen to that.
Exactly.
And
you got some beautiful ideas. You're turning them into real things.
I'm
so glad that you came on tonight. I haven't seen you
for
a while, and it's been such an absolute pleasure to have you be here tonight and get a chance to visit with you. It's cool how we've all played off each other, and who would ever think, you know, what's funny is after we get done in just a second, I'm going to be playing our outro in a minute, I got to go back in and change my program notes because this show was going to just be sitting around playing music, and we haven't played one song. So I got to change it to, let's see, we talked about Global Picnic and 10 animal totem cards.
Moving house.
Yeah, it'll be really a trip. I got to rewrite my program notes real quick.
Yeah, Jordan,
people are going to listen in the archive and go, okay, where's the 2 hours of music that wound up being three and there wasn't one song?
There's a song by a group called America called Lonely People. That fits very much with what you guys were talking about. It goes, this is for all the lonely people feeling they've been left high and dry. Don't give up until you've been given the silver cup and reach that highway in the sky. And it's talking about lonely, sad people all over the world.
Yep.
And songs always come to me when
that.
I hear things.
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at it right
now. You knew who America was right there. I could tell.
Exactly.
I had that record.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, guys. You know, Les Paul's just totally reminded me of you know, that's the whole thing about what I do, is there are no borders, there are no boundaries on brain injury. There are no borders or, you know, anything else on stroke, on aneurysm, on, you know, tumours or anything else. It just is a global problem. And the thing is that the stories that I hear from each individual country are repeated in every other country.
Yeah.
And I hear stories from Bulgaria, from Spain, from France, from Algeria, from Israel, from New Zealand, from Australia, from, you know, North America, the States, Canada, Venezuela, Brazil. I'm translating the whole time, you know. And I used to be bilingual before I fell on my head. And the funny thing is I actually picked up a book about Teach Yourself French the other day. And I thought, I know all this.
Wow.
It's really, really good. But I cannot speak French, but I know every single word in this book.
Wow.
I'm a year or two, and I'll be speaking to you in French again. So, yeah, it'll all come back. I know it will all come back. But
what I think is we as brain injury survivors look at what we've done tonight. Kim came on very fatigued. I came on fatigued. And you came on as a powerhouse and got us both snapped out of it. Thank you so very much.
I feel wonderful.
I hope Kim, you sound so much better than you did in the beginning. I never said it because I didn't want to remind you and let you allow yourself to go back down, because the mind will play tricks on you sometimes and do that to us. It's done it to me.
Oh, yeah.
You sound like you've got lit up like a Christmas tree.
Well, I felt tapped and against the wall, but I don't know, the stimulation of the ideas and the discoveries that we were making together were just really awesome. And I don't want to shut you guys down, but I'm going to have to, because the show's going to end in just a few minutes. But for everybody who's been listening tonight, do check out biglobalpicnic.org. And this coming Saturday, September 21st, whether it's a big group that you can pull together at the last minute or a small group, maybe just your family goes to the park, but try to, you know, send an email or make a quick phone call to your local newspaper or radio station or TV station. The worst that happens when you ask is someone says no, but they might say yes. Maybe print off one of Annie's logos and put it somewhere around where you're having your picnic. And as the spirits collectively connect I think it's going to link back to Annie's dream. So I want to thank everybody for being here tonight. I was so happy to have Annie Ricketts and Les Paul Morgan. And I want to thank everyone who supports Brain Injury Radio. We really appreciate you out there, and we're hoping that we're bringing you information that you find helpful as well, and that you'll never feel alone in your journey. I'm going to close the show in the usual way, and that's with something I believe we all have, and that is a guardian angel. This is Guardian Angel by Leah West. Make sure that you check out her website at leahwest.com. Good night, everybody. Have a great rest of the weekend. God bless.
This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. Did you know that Future Health can help make weight loss resolutions come true? When it's about biology and not willpower, it's not your fault that dieting just doesn't work. Find out if weight loss meds are right for you in just 3 minutes and for less than $3 a day. 8 out of 10 users say that using Future Health programs is more effective than anything they have ever tried. I have a family member who has tried for years to lose weight, and no matter how much she cuts out the snacking and the bad foods and how much she moves, it just doesn't happen for her. Well, with Future Health, they give millions of people affordable access to weight loss meds for less than $3 a day. Just take their quick 3-minute survey, and from there, if approved by a clinician, you'll get prescribed and get meds delivered to your door within 24 hours. Find out if weight loss meds are right for you in just 3 minutes at tryfh.com. That's tryfh.com.
Tryfh.com.
Future Health is not a healthcare services provider. Meds are prescribed at provider's discretion. Results may vary. Sponsored by Future Health.
We all face challenges, but when you have someone to walk with you, someone to confide in, someone who encourages and provides support, the road seems so much brighter. Since 1893, Nebraska Children's Home Society has been walking alongside, strengthening families as they navigate life's challenges, providing a community of support and resources so every child can grow up in a safe and loving home. To learn more, visit nchs.org today and help strengthen Nebraska families.